Blog Talk Radio.
Hello and welcome to Action Radio. This is Greg Penglis coming to you from the historic district of downtown Milton on the banks of the beautiful Blackwater River. And now let's get into Action Radio. Well, it's another exciting week as we attempt to battle the forces of Marxist hell that want to bring us down to the lowest possible level of humanity, of existence, of just general life, of quality of life, of everything from the supplies of things you could normally get to, this is a philosophy I sort of developed during the lockdowns was that the only thing that the Democrats and the Marxists and the Republican geldings want from want to basically allow the people, and that's us, is, work, taxes, and death. That's it. Basically, and misery. So let's see, work, misery, taxes, and death. And that's pretty much it. As far as they're concerned, that's all we're good for. And so it's going to be a huge fight for people that have suddenly, woken up. It's not the woke, woke is the problem. Getting woken up is the solution. And so there's a lot of things that are going on in this country today that most people never thought would happen that were actually very clear to some people. And you sort of look around and you say, how did you not see this coming? And where we're going to go today is going to be one of these experimental shows. So I don't know exactly how I'm going to do this because I've never done a show quite like this. There are three articles, which are all different. But all very much relatable to what's going on today, writing about completely different subjects that from Sun Tzu's ancient war philosophy to the Peloponnesian Wars and the Athenians and why they why they betrayed their people, the elite 30 that ruined everything for what was then democracy, which is a lousy system anyway compared to a republic. And then the last one is about this Chinese philosopher who's basically behind most of what's going on with the Communist Party. And you think, well, gee, Greg, what does all that have to do with each other? Well, I see it. I can't explain it in one sentence, but I'm going to try over the course of the next couple of hours to kind of relate to that. We've got Gene here, Gene Berninger, our producer, who I'm sure I will send scouring the internet for all kinds of information. And you, I mean, come on and join us, 215-383-3832, as we sort of progress through. I think one of the sort of pitfalls that I fall into as the host here is a tendency to go into regular news. And so this is not a news program. This is an advocacy program. Right? We're not here to, report the news. We're here to make the news. And so in many respects, it's very easy to go, hey, look what happened. I see a story, somewhere, especially One American News. I think, well, that's great. I want to talk about that. But then I have to realize, well, they just talked about it. I don't have to talk about it. It's already been done. So I want to talk about the things that no one's talking about. And so let me finish this just a sentence real quick here. So if you wonder why I don't talk about a lot of the stories that you hear on other sources, it's because they're being talked about on those other sources, and my job here is completely different. And I'm sorry, Gene. Yes. Good morning.
Hi. I was going to say, yeah, that's good, but I think it's also good to talk about some of the stuff going on, and you know why, and I think I struggle with this sometimes, and that is to get people out of the victim mentality and into the victor mentality. It's like, what can we do about it? It was like yesterday and some of the stupid stuff that's going on, and I'm just like, is it going to change? But that's victim. It's like, oh, I can't believe that's happening. That's victim. And so it's like, how can we change what is going on so we don't look at it through a victim's eyes, but a victor's eyes. And it's more empowering that way. And I think people will not feel as helpless because I think a lot of people are feeling helpless now. And like, and sometimes I'm like, it's like we got two separate rules here in this country, one for the politicians in Washington, one for everybody else.
Well, and these are all good points. And this is why I love having you on, because you're going to provide a different perspective. You're going to do things that I'm not going to do. You're going to point out stories, and you do every day, that I would not, that I might miss or because I'm trying to, do different priorities here. So this is good. And it's important to point those things out. They're speaking of the helpless and what can I do question. That's the whole point of Action Radio. What we do here is give folks, the answer to the question, what can I do? And what you can do very simply is the simplest thing is share the show, because then people are aware that there is a different kind of media. There's a different kind of source of information, and there's a different kind of inspiration to act. And where we act, where we are pioneering the new ground is with citizen legislation. The three big bills right now that are the most prominent because of these vaccine mandates and, you know, other mandates coming down from the government is you have to be able to protect your health and you have to be able to do something about the people that are trying to hurt you. Okay, so the thing about doing something about the people that are trying to hurt you, that would be the vaccine manufacturers, you know, big government, medical, you know, all those folks, basically Dr. Fascist and the pharma CEOs. And so the best way around that is the bill that we have that puts full vaccine liability back on the vaccine manufacturers where it belongs. You know, it shouldn't be in some VAERS reporting system. There shouldn't be a trust fund of your tax dollars to pay something that some corporation did in cooperation with government agencies that really aren't government agencies. People think they are, but they're really, you know, vaccine profit mills, you know, taking your tax dollars, giving them to universities, you know, with licenses and royalties who then, you know, give it to big pharma who doesn't have to have the research costs now, you know, and so they do kickbacks to the government officials and then the big pharma produces stuff and then the licenses and royalties from the CDC and Dr. Fascist and all those folks, they make money on the sales. And there's trillions of dollars that are involved in basically killing huge numbers of people, you know, by suppressing the cures, by suppressing early treatments, by suppressing the information. These people, you know, Dr. Fascist is probably more responsible, probably has through his actions, directly or indirectly, killed more people than the Civil War. And if you look at the 700,000 folks plus that were allegedly lost under COVID, and the numbers are so screwed up, it's hard to know. But Dr. Harvey Risch, who I've been in contact with, was on last night with Mark Levin. On Life, Liberty, and Levin. I got to talk to him, too, because he has our bills. I guess that's why he didn't mention those. You know, he had a perfect chance to introduce citizen legislation to the nation. I'm going to sort of see if I can nudge him a bit and go, Dr. Risch, what happened? Why did you miss? But anyway, but the point is that kind of bill makes a huge difference. Our bill to amend Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act, while Congress is running around with fake Facebook whistleblowers and delusions of antitrust breakup of all these companies and all the other things they're doing, we simply provide a wall of separation in our bill between the providers and the users of interactive computer services, you know, also known as search engines and social media, and so that makes news. The other thing that people can do is support our bill that Dr. Zelenko and I wrote. And Dr. Zelenko is the one who gave hydroxychloroquine, you know, to the world basically in terms of his protocol, and also, you know, told President Trump about this, who I'm sure took it. I'm sure Dr. Fascist takes hydroxychloroquine every day, you know, whereas he's, you know, evil enough to suppress the cure for everybody else, he's not stupid enough to not take it for himself. And that we can, I'd love to verify that someday. But the bill to overhaul the FDA so that the president and or Congress can write emergency use authorizations and are not blocked by big pharma through the FDA. You know, so those are things you can do. You can support those three bills. Those three bills would be huge if you supported them, massively huge. So you want something to do? You know, support our Section 230 bill, support our bill to put liability back on vaccine manufacturers, support our bill to overhaul the FDA. And if you're local or if your county might be interested, support our other bill, which is to create illegal alien-free zones, basically the opposite of sanctuary cities in your county. And all those are available at writeyourlaws.com. That's WRITEYOURLAWS. So if you're looking for something to do, that's something you can do. Back to you, Jean.
No, that's good. And talking about the vaccine mandate here, it's so interesting because in India, I didn't know this, in India, only 5% of the country is vaccinated.
Mm-hmm.
And they're using ivermectin, but I'm just amazed that the it's so pushed here. But then you look at a country like India that is so huge population wise, mm-hmm. and 5% of the country.
Well, see, now the Indian government the Indian government actually, as much as they can. I mean, India is a poor country with a whole lot of people, but for the most part, they act as much as they can in the interest of Indians. You know, whereas our government acts in the interest of themselves, their own personal power, and the corporate, you know, fascists that have joined with the government fascists to create a corporate government fascist, you know, society. I mean, that's what fascism is. It's the merging of the biggest corporations with the biggest government to create the most oppression. You know, and this is why most people don't know the definition. That's part of deception. I'm going to get into that with Sun Tzu in just a minute here, but this is what's going on in India. That has limited money. They've got a billion plus people. And the best way to keep those people safe is with the lowest cost, most effective medicines, right? So they're not bothering with the politics and big pharma. They don't have time for that. You know, they've got a massive nation. You know, they don't want to have the cost of withholding medical, attention to and medical treatments to. So ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, which are dirt cheap, incredibly effective. And so they just cut through all the BS and go right to the treatments and cures. And it works. The most vaccinated countries are the countries with the most COVID and the most variations. All right. The least vaccinated places, India, Africa, other places like that. It's like they're almost being saved by their lower, per capita incomes, because big pharma goes where the money is. United States, Europe, different countries like that. So Israel, Australia, so you'll find that the countries with the most money, the tendency is to be the most vaccinated, and therefore the most, ill with COVID injury from the vaccines. So that should tell you something right there. It's a fascinating thing. Fascinating thing that's going on here. Let me kind of sort of leap around a little bit. And again, we're going to go off probably the deep end of tangents as we go through. I want to start with Sun Tzu. And so the whole point of this, let me give you the title of the show, where I'm taking this. Title of the show today, Sun Tzu, The Art of War with China and Knowing Your Country. So maybe I should start by explaining that. Sun Tzu is either one person or many people over time, we're not really sure, who developed the philosophy. And so when you look at China, you have to think of everything they do is based on philosophy. So if we're going to compete with China, we really need a better philosophy. And we have one, we're just not using it. Our better philosophy is what the founders gave us, individual rights, God-given rights, that there's a power higher than us. The whole basis of the climate change argument is that we can legislate the forces of nature. To quote Gene, are you kidding me? That's not going to happen, all right? But the delusion that it is happened, that it can be done, is what causes these people to do such insanely stupid things, okay? So that's part of the situation. So but if you go by the Constitution, if you go by the individual rights, the Judeo-Christian ethic, Western civilization, what really the left is terming white supremacy, and it's not white people they're talking about. It's the thoughts of originally, white folks in England and a few other countries of the world that believed in, the individual is paramount and everything sort of, falls, after that. Everything is there to safeguard and protect the individual, individual rights, individual thought, individual actions, individual control of your body, all that stuff, all these individual rights, are something that is a supremacist philosophy, because I do believe that is supreme to other beliefs. In other words, Marxism, communism, different things like that. Democracy. Boy, democracy is the quickest road, because people are so selfish. They'll vote themselves, slavery and bondage, thinking they're getting something better. So Sun Tzu comes along. And I think, 1 to 2,000 years ago, again, it gets kind of, fuzzy back there with the records. And he had this philosophy. And one of the things he said, a couple of things he said, I'm going to see if I can quote here. He says, if you know the enemy and know yourself, your victory will not stand in doubt. If you know heaven and know earth, you may make your victory complete. And I found this article, The 10 Principles of Sun Tzu, by the Sun Tzu Do Facebook group, which I find interesting, because I tried to post this article on Facebook and it was immediately condemned. You can't post this URL. So Facebook's own group, they're censoring themselves, which is quite interesting. Anyway, it comes from books by Doug Nash, books by Sun Tzu Do, and that's D-O, and it comes after it. So if you want to know Sun Tzu Do, the way of Sun Tzu, that's where I found this. Anyway, so this is saying, if you know the enemy and know yourself, your victory will not stand in doubt. And if you look at China, right now. So the whole, you figure, and this is something I learned from Claire Lopez, that she's on Thursdays, that in China, the elite of the elite of the elite, it's a full meritocracy society. Now, it's still communist, it's still dictatorial, and, you can't be anything you want to be in China. You just can't. You've got to prove that you can do things. So when it gets to the leader, Xi Jinping, he has passed a multitude of challenges his entire life that he would allegedly be the best, brightest, most capable, most evil, most, daring, most, whatever it is that China's looking for. He's the epitome in this entire nation of, again, a billion people. That's what they've come up with. Whereas in the United States, it's a totally different philosophy. You know, here, and I like our philosophy better. I think we have a better one. I just wish we'd use it. But now this country's been sold out to elites who believe in power, who believe that they should rule the people, that individual rights, you know, Joe Biden, freedom, you know, as he scoffs away. And that's his attitude. Or Arnold Schwarzenegger, you know, over in California, he says, screw your freedom. Yeah, well, screw you, pal. You know, freedom's what it's all about. And so these people have gone away from it. Now, I know that. Gene knows that. Listeners to the show know that. We know this. We know who these people are. But they're deluded by their own propaganda. And most people, you know, anybody that thinks of Biden as president, you know, you're missing the boat. You're already lost. You're not looking at yourself, you know. And so what Sun Tzu says, if you know the enemy and know yourself, your victory will not stand in doubt. Okay. So we try to sort of know the enemy in terms of ourselves, but we don't know ourselves. And I think that's one of the problems, you know, that, well, let me put it this way. There's an advantage to being an immigrant. You know, so I think the reason immigrants, lawful immigrants, are some of the most patriotic people in this country and the most, you know, detestable, you know, of illegal aliens is the fact that we know what this country can be. We know what this country should be. We know what this country started out to be. And we know America as we see it through the eyes of different nations. Okay. I grew up in three countries, Canada, Australia, and the United States. And that gives me insight that you can't have unless you have that experience. And Sun Tzu talks about this down, you know, a little bit further on this first article. All right. And so that you need, I mean, experience. There's no substitute for experience. You can't understand America if you haven't lived somewhere else. You just can't. You think you can, but you can't, because you can't see what you can't see. And that's not, I'm not condemning that. I'm not insulting. I'm not being derogatory of that. It's just a simple fact that the ability to understand the United States rests upon your having lived or visited a whole lot other places and see those people how they see themselves. And that allows you to see what's going on here. And so when Sun Tzu says, if you know the enemy and know yourself, your victory will not stand in doubt. So let's look at this in terms of China today. China knows themselves. Everything they do is based on philosophy. You know, what are you doing? Why are you doing it? You know, it's the questions we don't ask here as we look for the next quarter's, you know, bottom line profit. Okay. And so what China has done is know their enemy. They consider us their enemy. So what do? They set up Confucian centers in all the universities. They steal all the technology. They have Chinese students all over the place. They watch everything we do, everything we say, and then they throw it back at us. You know, when President Nobody sent you know, the nobody delegates to meet with China and Alaska, and they screamed and yelled, "You're a bunch of racists," you know, because they know that that makes, you know, white people cringe, you know, and they know exactly what to do. How do they know that? Because they know themselves. They know us. Do we know them? No. Well, some of us do. I'm not saying me. I'm not a, you know, Chinese, you know, student of history, but folks like Peter Pry, who will be on a little bit later, Dr. Pry, Claire Lopez, you know, all kinds of folks you can read, you know, this, their life's job has been to know them and know us. And I would say all of them at some point have either traveled extensively or lived outside the country. And that gives them the critical insight into what's going on. That's why Obama's so effective about worming his way through to try and create a Marxist Muslim society here. He's lived in other places. He was in Indonesia as a child. He knows what the United States looks like. And unfortunately, he's using it against us. You know, but I understand him because I lived outside of the United States too. Slow down, Greg. The United States too. I know what he knows about this country. That's why I can see what he's doing. Okay. And so, you know, this is why he should never have been president, and why anybody who's, you know, as disloyal as he is with his citizenship being challenged as to where he was actually born, that still hasn't been resolved. And his allegiance to the United States, having lived in all these different countries, you know, you cannot be the advantage of living in other countries is that you you get insight in the United States. The difference is that your loyalty is different. It just is. And I think that having, you know, a president like Donald Trump, who's 100% American. I mean, he's about as American as it gets. And I know he's traveled extensively. I know I don't think he's lived outside the country, but he, you know, he knows the world because he knows how to deal with China. He knew how to deal with the Middle East, you know, with the Abraham Accords. He knew how to deal with North Korea. He knew how to deal with all those things because he knows himself. He knows this country. And he knows the enemy. Okay, so you look at the principles, and then you look at somebody like President Nobody, you know, let's go, Braden. You know, you look at him, he doesn't know anything except power. He's absolutely corrupt. He's exactly what the Chinese want, because they can manipulate him, because he doesn't know himself. You know, he's self-deluded. He's deluded about this country, and he actually thinks he's the elite with the brains to run everything. That freedom, ugh, you know, and that's what's going on. So anyway, that's the first part. I'll get to the second part here. I don't know how much I'm going to get through this. This is going to be an interesting couple hours here. But the next part is, if you know heaven and you know earth, you make your victory complete. So let's start with the first part. Gene, you want to get into this, or do you want me to continue my dissertation here? I'll give Gene a chance to.
You can continue.
Isn't this fun? The things we cover here that just nobody else ever thinks about doing this. All right. So the second part of the quote, if you know heaven and you know earth, you make your victory complete. So in other words, there's a difference between victory and complete victory. And I'm still working on that. I'm not a master of Sun Tzu principles yet. But think about that. China's looking at us not only of making a victory, but making their victory complete. Okay, so there's another quote by Sun Tzu, and I put this on Facebook because it's kind of tiny writing. Let me look at it. He says, thus it is that in war, the victorious strategist only seeks battle after the victory has been won. Okay, I want you to think about it. The victorious strategist only seeks battle after the victory has been won. So think of it in terms of when Claire Lopez was talking about Go, this game that I don't really know well, but I'm sort of learning about it, you know, through position and the way it works. Also chess, the idea of strategically lining up your pieces and then attacking. Remember let's get really crazy here, the film Independence Day, you know, where all the spaceships were placed over the earth at strategic points. They all attacked at the same point. They all coordinated through the satellites, through our own phone system, and that's how they did it. So look what China's doing. They're lining up their pieces. They're playing Go. They're playing Go in the South China Sea. They're playing Go at both ends of the Panama Canal. They're playing Go in South America, the Middle East. They're playing Go all over the place. They are lining up their pieces. They are surrounding, isolating, dividing, and they're learning about their enemy. And so this is everything that China's doing is based on their philosophy. So if you want to understand what China's doing, understand how China understands themselves. And the way you do that is you learn Chinese philosophy, and you start with Sun Tzu. So hopefully I'm starting to relate this in a way that gives you a comprehensive picture of how little we know and how little our quote, leaders, you know, care to know. It's not that not knowing is not necessarily a bad thing, because you can learn more. Not caring that you don't know, that's the problem. And this is where we are right now. So the quote of the article is, this is probably the most used and misunderstood quotes of Sun Tzu. However, in this quote is the sum total of the art of war. Understanding this quote can take a lifetime. Deceptively simple, it somehow encapsulates all the wisdom of the book. And then they've broken them down into planning, character, using advantages, alliances, deception, useless spies, strengths and weaknesses, energy, communication, winning whole. Okay, so these different parts of Sun Tzu's philosophy, I guarantee you, Xi Jinping, you know, probably reads this once a week. You know, and then looking at this, you know, what are we doing? Are we planning? Is the character of our leaders appropriate? Are we using our advantages? You know, do you think President Nobody? Do you think the elitist, the Obama, you know, administration 3, do you think they're doing this? No, they're simply following Marxist doctrine, you know, Marxist Muslim doctrine. It's a rather interesting alliance with what's going on. And they think that they're brilliant. They're so bright. They can run everything for all of us. Everything will be fine if you just let them, you know, totally dismantle our country and run over it. See, the Chinese know this. Okay. And then they're exploiting it. We don't know Chinese philosophy, and that's the problem. And the fact that the Chinese will study this one quote for a lifetime to try and understand it, most Americans don't have anywhere near that kind of discipline, okay? But if you want to understand China, you have to have that kind of discipline, and you have to look at them, and you go, what are they thinking about us? So whereas, you know, if we were approaching China as the Chinese would approach China, if they were us, they would be taking all those students that are in our country and spying on them. They were taking Confucian, as from Confucius, okay? We'd be studying them. We'd be spying on all the Chinese embassies, all the Chinese consulates. We'd have moles in their businesses. We'd have satellite technology. We'd have our intelligence people all over China. We'd be looking at everything they do. We'd know what Xi Jinping had for breakfast. We'd know what chopsticks he uses. We'd know everything about him. We'd understand what he understands, okay? That's the art of war. We're at war with China, okay? But we're at war in China in terms of total victory and not just military victory. And that's one of our biggest mistakes, is we think if we're not in a military shooting war, we're not at war. And the Chinese don't see it that way. Japanese don't either, by the way. There was a great film with Sean Connery and Wesley Snipes investigating murder at Komatsumi Towers or whatever. It was a great film anyway. But it went into a lot of Japanese philosophy. Rising Sun, that was it, Rising Sun, a Michael Crichton book. But it went to a lot of Japanese philosophy, which isn't that different. The Bushido Code, the Warrior Code, okay? Business is war. the Japanese don't go to business. They go to war through business, okay? I mean, it's peaceful, but it's still war, okay? So war is a philosophy. War is not necessarily bullets. By the time the bullets are flying, if you understand Sun Tzu, it's already too late. The victory was decided long before the bullets start flying. I'll give you a perfect example. It just popped into my head. Gettysburg, okay? Gettysburg was won before Pickett's charge. The North did not, slaughter and defeat Pickett's charge, at the time Pickett started charging, okay? That battle was already won, like several months ahead of time, when they decided to meet, where they met, where the troops were positioned, the armaments of the different troops, from the guns to the cannons, the everything, the placement, the timing, the spies, the deception, everything about that was already preordained by the time the battle started. The victory had already been won. Okay, and the quintessential victory is the victory you win without having to fight, without having to shoot. So what China's looking for is total victory over the South China Sea, victory over us by installing, China's ambassador to the United States, President Nobody, Joe Biden, and they don't have to win. Okay, they don't have to shoot. They don't have to do anything. We're already doing exactly what they want us to do. Okay, that's a superior philosophy. That's the principles of Sun Tzu. So if you understand that, you understand what's happening, and you understand how stupidly we're acting. Okay, and this is where this comes from. I even started hardly in this article, so I'm only just going to give you a couple of bits of it here. Planning. The first chapter in The Art of War is about planning, decisions, and what affects good decision makers. Well, who are our decision makers? President Nobody? The cabinet? Pete Buttigieg, with his husband, adopting a kid and taking off for 2 weeks during the greatest supply chain, crisis in modern history? Where's the planning? There is no planning. Unless the planning is all behind the scenes and they're not telling us, and that comes to deception. That's another part of Sun Tzu too. Okay, so he talks about planning. He talks about character. The commander stands for the virtues of wisdom, sincerity, benevolence, courage, and strictness. Strictness would be discipline. Can anybody think of a commander currently in the Joint Chiefs, the military, the Secretary of State, Secretary of Defense, the President Nobody, the cabinet, the shadow government of Obama, that stands for virtues, wisdom, sincerity, benevolence, courage, and strictness? I can't name any one of them. I think they stand for corruption, power, elitism, selfishness, and moral depravity. That's what they stand for. Okay, and that's the difference between them and us. Now, China might not stand for virtues of wisdom, sincerity, benevolence, courage, and strictness either. But they know about them. Okay, and that's how they're judging themselves. Here's another interesting quote. Now, the general, this is another section. Now, the general is the bulwark of the state. If the bulwark is complete at all points, the state will be strong. If the bulwark is defective, the state will be weak. You are the general that is the bulwark of your state. That is why you need to be complete, your character strong and decent. You must know how to use yourself as well as those around you. Interesting. Gene, Mark Milley. Do you see any of these qualities in Mark Milley or that other General McKenzie or Blinken, Secretary of State, or I forgot the name of the Secretary of Defense. I just call him the affirmative
Attorney
action.
Attorney General.
Yeah. Attorney General Merrick Garland. Yeah, do you see any virtues of
Biden?
Wisdom, sincerity? Yeah, go ahead. President Nobody? Yeah, go ahead.
No. It's I giggle, but it's not funny. It's
no,
the,
well, it is, but it's tragic.
It's
but,
the...
Yeah,
it's the I don't even want to know what to call it. Just the political office of corruption, and I think that's the only reason or only way you get a job with them is if you're incompetent or you're just so unscrupulous. I sit there and watch some of the stuff that's going on and listen to these people talk. Mm-hmm. And I did not listen to Biden's talk on, was it Thursday night, Wednesday night, whenever it was.
Oh, the town meeting?
Yeah. Even my mom said I should listen to it because she said it was so sad. Yeah, And you can't say, well, people voted him in because bottom line is if you vote two or three or four times, that's not voting him in. That's cheating. And if that's how you have to win an election is by cheating, that says a whole lot in itself. But yeah, it's corruption at its finest.
Well, I think,
but
the
good
big...
thing is people are starting to speak up, and it'll be interesting. It'll be very interesting because, Greg, do you really think Pelosi is going to resign anytime soon? I mean, that's the talk
not.
Now.
She's still breathing. She's
yeah,
never
but the thing
resign.
Is, it's she's so power hungry, and it's such a mess in D.C. that it's like, you think she's going to want to get out before it? So she, I don't want to say so she can't be blamed, because she would never, you know, she can't be blamed anyway because she's Nancy Pelosi. But everybody there, I don't even know. How do you explain to a child when they talk about what's going on and it's like, well, you're not supposed to lie. You're supposed to not cheat. You're supposed to da-da-da-da-da. And you look at politics and they're all doing what we were taught as children not to do. And I think it's just a good example to tell your child or tell your whoever, friend, whatever, that it's now is a time where we look at these people and do you want to be like them or are you going to be the righteous person you were meant to be? Are you going to work to earn your living or are you going to make a living off of someone else illegally? And a lot of these people, what they're doing, how they got a lot of their money wasn't the righteous way. I mean, you even look at how much money Biden has. Where did he make that money from? I mean, if you're getting $500,000 for a Hunter picture or painting or whatever it is, I mean, I saw that last week. That is disgusting. And we can't find out who is doing it. Or who's paying for it. We know who's paying for it.
But here's the problem, too. It's not that the fact that they're making money illegally, that's bad enough. The fact that it's acceptable to them. Okay, so let's look at this in terms of
Chinese
philosophy, in terms of virtue, in terms of you know, all the things that, that create your character. Okay, so their character is they have no character. Their character is that money is its own reward. It's not, you know, the quote is from Shakespeare, is not money is the root of all evil. The love of money is the root of all evil. And most people miss that. You know, other quotes too I can think of. But anyway, but that's what's going on here. So the corruption, it's the love of power. I believe the love of power is every bit as bad, if not worse, than the love of money. The love of power can create money in corrupt ways. So these people, they have no soul. They have no character. They are empty black holes of eternal selfishness, a term I usually apply to narcissists. But I think I think narcissism plays a big part in this. They are their own god. They are their own society. They are their own elite. They are a closed club of people that all believes like they do. And to get into that club, you have to say and do exactly as they say and do. And the problem is it's self-limiting. Because it's easy to trip them up, okay? But the biggest thing I see is a loyalty, that competence is like way down on the list. Loyalty is the single most important factor. You have to absolutely be a true believer. You have to drink the Kool-Aid, swallow the pill, swallow the blue pill, you know, go along. And if you dissent one bit, they're going to turn on you. You know, so they already hate the conservatives, the independents, the patriots, the Christians, the Jews, the religions of faith, I believe, in a higher power. They already hate those folks. Us basically, us rebels. They already hate us. But the people they really hate, the people they really hate, the people they reserve their you know, their bullet in the back of the head for, you know, when the gulags come, are the people that used to belong that left, the traitors. You know, it's like Muslims, they hate the rest of the world because they want to make us all Muslim. But the people they really hate the most are former Muslims. Those are the ones they can't stand. Okay, so there's a loyalty. It's like a political mafia. It's probably the best way to explain it. You got to kiss the ring, show, prove your worth. And I learned this when I was a liberal in Washington. I was a liberal in my early days. I was raised in a socialist family. So I went to Washington as a liberal and came out a conservative. It's really kind of funny how that works. But valuable lessons I learned from the liberal mindset, you know, in working with liberal groups for things that I allegedly believed in that were, you know, basically pretty good in principle, you got to suffer for the cause. Okay. That's one of the reasons I changed from being a liberal way back when, is that there is a certain measure of proving your worth to suffer for the cause. You actually have to prove that you're worth suffering for the cause by really suffering for the cause. You know, working at jobs for too little, working extreme hours, you know, proving that you philosophically agree, all this other stuff. So it's a cult. It's a very dangerous place. It's part of the reason I thought, you know what, this makes no sense. And I started believing much more in the individual, which led me to conservatism, the Constitution, and ultimately Action Radio. But the experience I got that has created Action Radio came from going to Washington as a liberal and the change that took place over about 4 months. It was quite fascinating. So, but that's the difference. I look at myself and I say, okay, well, where am I? What am I doing? What do I believe in? What's my character? Am I living up to my highest ideals as a person? Okay. So I ask that of myself all the time. These people don't. Because they assume that everything they do because they do it is its own validation. And that's the danger. It's the believing in your own propaganda, believing that everything you do is right and everything your group does is right because the group agrees with it. Well, it's it's kind of easy to get the group to agree. You know, you ask some of these people if we'd be better off if all conservatives were rounded up, put in gulags, and simply shut up. And then, well, they'll go, well, yeah, because then we can get our stuff done. You know, then we can create our society. We wouldn't have to bother with all this stuff. Okay, they think that. Okay, yeah. So don't think for a second they wouldn't lock us all up. So, which gets to the next point here. Of Sun Tzu, if your opponent is of choleric temper, which is all the people I just talked about, seek to irritate him, pretend to be weak, and he may grow arrogant. And this applies to you as well as your enemy. And now you know why character is important. Your greatest strength can be turned into your greatest weakness. Okay, so let's think about that. What is action radio? What is citizen legislation? It's irritating. If we suddenly start proposing bills at the national, state, and local level that go against the deep state, corrupt, Marxist, Muslim ideological supremacy that they have, okay, they're going to be irritated. They're going to retaliate, okay? So it's going to start as irritation. It's going to start as us saying, no, we don't accept your laws. We're going to write better ones. I mean, there is no way that Congress would write a law that would put liability back on vaccine manufacturers. They can't because they'd lose all their money. But we can. You know, so we can do what we want. So to answer the question that I get all the time, you know, don't you need lawyers to go over this stuff, you know, before you submit it? No. Fortunately, there's no law against submitting, you know, laws to Congress for them to consider and to hopefully pass, you know, right now. Because that's what the big pharma and the, you know, the Archer Daniels Midland and the environmental wackos and George Soros and all these other people, all these special interests, they submit laws to Congress all the time. But ours are better because they make, you know, they create freedom for everybody. So that's the difference. So yes, we can do it, and you can bet, you know, that the lawyers for big pharma, once our vaccine liability bill becomes public knowledge in a big way, you can guarantee they're going to go over every word of it. So yeah, it's going to be gone over by lawyers. Don't worry about that. It's also going to be gone over by lawyers when it gets to Congress and some of these other state and local legislators. So irritation, that's a big thing for us to do. Talking about using advantages. It is only one who is thoroughly, this is back to Sun Tzu, it is only one who is thoroughly acquainted with the evils of war that can thoroughly understand the profitable way of carrying it on. How's that for cold, hard reality? That's Machiavelli. You know, that's philosophy there. Okay. So is China thoroughly acquainted with the evils of war? Oh, sure they are. I mean, China's, you know, had warlords back, you know, several thousand years. They've been at war with Japan. They've been at war with Russia. And they've been at war with a bunch of places. They've been at war with us through Korea. You know, China knows war. They had a civil war when Mao Zedong took over China in 1949 and exiled Chiang Kai-shek and the nationalists to Taiwan. That's why they're so pissed off at him. Still a thorn in their side. Yeah, freedom. Look, see, it works. Ha ha. You know, which is why I proposed over the weekend that Trump go to Taiwan and say, look, freedom works. Isn't this great? You know, and also to talk about Hong Kong from Taiwan. Say, let's make, you know, I talked about this about a year ago, that I wanted Trump when he was in his first term, his first lawful term, you know, before the second lawful term was taken away. I thought he should go to Hong Kong or at least talk about Hong Kong and say, let Hong Kong be Hong Kong, you know, make a big deal about it, be the thorn, be the irritant in Xi Jinping's side while all the time studying him and studying his reactions. See, Gene, here's another thing, too, that I don't understand. We have war colleges to study every battle that ever happened. We have a State Department of experts on every country on earth that speak pretty much every language, you know, on earth. We have these incredible resources. We have the Library of Congress. We have all these amazing resources. And it seems to me that, you know, presidents, this includes Trump and all these folks, they only talk to like maybe 10 people, their 10 closest advisors, and they sort of make things up as they go, and they don't draw on these amazing resources. And the difference is China does draw on these amazing resources. They have reports from all these people. You know, as the meritocracy grows, the elite of the elite of the elite in terms of capability, not ideology, but I'm sure they go hand in hand. You know, they look at everything that we do, and they look at this entire comprehensive program in terms of philosophy, not in terms of, you know, expediency of, you know, like Bill Clinton's pizza parties late at night. Well, what do you want to do with the country? Uh-huh. You know, so it's a very different thing. Next part of this is alliances. He says, hence a saying, one may know how to conquer without being able to do it. No one has ever achieved anything of note without having alliances. Knowing how to conquer is the first step. Building the alliances to get it done is the second. There is a difference between being patient and persist. Sometimes you simply have to wait for a change in circumstance, and what is impossible then becomes probable. You know, anyway, so it goes on. But the thing is alliances. Okay, so Action Radio, we're going to ally ourselves with everybody we can. Okay, there's an entire movement of people that are individual, that aren't organized yet, that is going to make for multiple alliances as people see fit which organizations to join. There are medical freedom alliances. There are all kinds of – this is the latest one, trying to get rid of the unconstitutional vaccine mandates. There are alliances all over the place. So who are the elite allied with? And so this actually is a question I want to ask. let me throw this out to Gene. Who are the elite allied with? You know, who is Biden allied with? Is it because it's not Americans? Okay, who are the Secretary of Defense? Who's Mark Milley allied with? He's allied with, you know, I'll answer that one. He's allied with his counterpart in China. That's who he reports to and with.
Okay? But I think they all are. Yeah. I think all of them, their allies are China. If you look at it, if you really think about it, that's what I would say.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I think Biden too. I think he's the ambassador from China. I think Mark Milley reports to his Chinese counterpart. I think what I really – I'm going to make it a little bit broader and put it to you that globalists are who these folks are allied to. Dr. Fascist and the WHO, not the group, the World Health Organization. You know, these people, they answer to globalists, and they answer to their globalist club. There's a Dr. Fascist. And for those that don't know, that's Dr. Fauci. You know, the genocidal psychopathic drug pusher. And so there's a Dr. Fascist in every country. Now, whether they're listened to or not is another story. Okay, I don't think the Dr. Fascist of India has anywhere near this way that our Dr. Fascist does. And that's because India has ivermectin, hydroxychloroquine, and they're actually curing the problem. Okay, so that's the difference. So they believe in the people, they believe in themselves, they believe in what works. Here, our elite, there's a separation in this country, and this is one of the biggest problems. The separation is that those who are unfortunately in charge right now, their allegiance is not to the United States. It's not to, you know, God-given rights. It's not to the individual. It's not to the freedom of speech, of expression, of religion, of assembly, of redressing the government for grievances. Look at the 600 people arrested, you know, from January 6th who basically, you know, participated in the Capitol Hill Invitational walk-in. It's not that, okay? Their allegiance is to a globalist, you know, if not organization, certainly philosophy, that the group is greater than the individual, that the group of nations is greater than any one individual nation. And if any individual nation strays, it's like if you're a Marxist leftist and all of a sudden you stray and you go, I don't believe this anymore. Yeah, they're going to try and kill you. You know, if not literally, then certainly figuratively in terms of character assassination. Same thing here. The United States is astray. They're straying from the globalist ideal of control of everything, okay? And that makes us, you know, out there, and they can't have that because they're so I think they're basically cowards. They're so insecure in their beliefs that any dissent represents, you know, a trauma to them as opposed to, you disagree with me, well, that just means you disagree with me. It's nothing against your character or mine. Take Gene. Gene disagrees with me all the time. She's my favorite producer. This is great. I don't care because I go by the strength of my ideas. You know, and I will compete on those. And sometimes they're right, and sometimes they get modified, and sometimes I'm wrong.
Well, you know, it would be really boring if everybody thought alike.
But that's what they want, though. That's the contradiction. They want everybody to think alike, and that's
they
the
do,
delusion.
And that's the sad thing because people and sometimes I just want to ask. It's like, why do you believe that? But it's like they don't even have an answer. It's more to the effect that, well, because Biden and. It was interesting over the weekend there, I don't know who, someone, I don't remember who asked in Florida, liberals, what has Biden done? Positive thing Biden has done. No one could answer anything.
Of course not.
But yet they vote for him. And they'd vote for him again, no doubt. And it's like, I know that some would vote for him because I hated Trump. But it's like.
And why did they hate Trump?
Really? You like how high gas is? And then you haven't seen nothing yet. You know, you like how good or how much groceries cost? I mean, it's pretty sad. Last week and Saturday and Sunday both, I don't know if I told you last week, but both days I had to go to 3 different grocery stores to get what I needed. And it's like, I wasn't looking for these hard to find items. I mean, that's crazy. What is it going to be like in another few months? Because all the containers off the coast of California that aren't able to come in and that we're supposed to curb our Christmas spending. And it's like, for one, I'm not one to buy a whole lot of gifts over Christmas because I really don't believe that's what Christmas is. However, it's like, who am I to tell someone else what to do? And why change what they've been doing for years just because you want to throw in another, you know, just policy, or not even policy, change people's way of life. It's like, and are you going to cut your Christmas spending? I don't think so.
Well, and that's the problem. And now you can, you're not going to be able to buy as much stuff because the dollar is reduced. You know, and here's the weird part. And I made this post over the weekend to Facebook. You know, Trump was elected by the people. Biden was installed by the government. So this is what happens when the government makes the decisions, when government makes central planning. It doesn't work. It's never worked because it's the individual decisions by 300 million plus individuals in this country that make it work. Everybody deciding for themselves what's best creates the trends, creates the markets, creates the influence, creates the patterns, creates the decisions overall that are the best for the greatest number of people as individuals. Now, when you start centrally planning, they can't take all those variables into account. They can't take into account everybody's individual decision. Only every individual can take into account every individual's decisions. And those decisions have trends. So what these people are doing by trying to decide everything is that they ruin everything. Okay. In their vision, you know, they have to control the climate by reducing our ability to put gas in our tank. They see that as a good thing. So when the price rises, they don't see that as evil. They don't care how many people, you know, are going to freeze to death this winter because they can't afford heating oil. They don't care because their goal is to reduce carbon dioxide. Why do they want to reduce that? Well, they think it's going to lower the temperature. Trust me, this winter is going to be low enough. You know, you're up north. You're going to see a really low temperature. You're going to wish for global warming. Guarantee
exactly.
It.
It's the most hypocritical thing. Mm-hmm. And it's like they say that the government, you know, powers that be in government are pushing the electronic cars. Well, the only people that can afford the electronic cars are the rich, for the most part.
Yeah.
And
Tesla's
then it's
expensive.
Like, are you really looking at everything? How much does it cost to make a battery? How do they make the battery? What are they doing once the batteries are dead and they have to buy another battery? And I could bet it takes way, way more gasoline-type, petroleum-type products to make a battery and get it working. How do we get the electric to power the battery than it would just to use gas?
Mm-hmm. And gas, actually, with catalytic converters and other technologies, remarkably clean. The engines are so much more efficient than they used to be. And the thing is, when oil travels down a pipeline, you don't lose any of its energy, because the oil that leaves the refinery, the oil that leaves the oil well and gets, you know, thousands of miles is exactly the same oil. Electricity is not. You know, you lose 5, 10, 15, 20% of your electricity, depending on how far you send it. So the bigger the power plant, the further they send their power, the more power leaks out those transmission lines. Electricity leaks. Okay, that's wasting. So you have to generate more than the leakage, which you have to pay for. So you're actually paying for the leakage for the bigger power plants. You're better off with small power plants. You're better off with solar electric panels, you know, generating as much electricity as you can yourself. Those should be tax deductible, by the way, and included in all new houses. But because that only makes sense, unless, of course, you know, people don't want them, they won't buy them. But that's another story. We'll get into that. But anyway, these people believe their own propaganda. They believe in their own self-righteousness with no character, no soul, no intrinsic knowledge or philosophy to back it up. They just believe it's the empty power. It's the empty control. It's the empty belief that what they're doing is right, even though it's wrong. And it's more important to them to philosophically agree that climate change is going to kill us and do all the things to try and stop that, even though it can't be done because we don't control the climate. You know, driving your car is not going to change the climate. I'm sorry, folks. It's just not. Compared to what? A volcano? You know, you want to talk about, you know, different pollutants, sulfur monoxides and nitrous, you know, monoxides and different things, nitrogen monoxide, all different chemicals that are thrown into the air in a volcano. Every car in the world is nothing compared to a decent volcano blast. It just isn't. All right. Volcano blasts can darken the sun for weeks. Look at Krakatoa. You know, so it's just, we're not the biggest thing on the planet, but yet these people think they are. And that's the problem. So there's self-solutions, which gets to the next point of Sun Tzu, deception. All warfare is based on deception. Okay, so you look at China. Everything China's doing is deception. They're moving in. They're moving their pieces. They're taking over harbors. They're taking over factories. They're loaning money to companies, you know, to help them get going. And then they demand all their products. You know, they're doing everything. It's all based on deception. Everything China does is based on deception. Confucius centers at the universities are spy organizations. Our embassies from China and consulates, you know, are spy organizations. You know, everything they do is based on taking what we have. It's all deception. They know that. We don't. You know, we're so open. We're so open and honest. We give them the tools to compete against us and to defeat us. We give them the tools because we don't know ourselves. We haven't understood heaven and earth as well as we haven't understood the enemy in us. So the second part of the quote, heaven and earth, all right? How do you understand heaven and earth, okay? Well, that's the philosophy. That's the how do you understand the non-understandable? You know, we don't have the capacity to understand heaven yet, you know, because we're not there. That's a whole different thing. That's why we call God God, okay, for that simple reason. But people of faith know that. They know what they don't understand and accept that. That's what faith's all about, okay? The people that don't understand that, that think they're the highest power in the universe, that if they can't understand it, see it, touch it, it's not real, they don't have faith. They are self-deceiving. Of course, the last quote here, it says, not all deceptions, you know, are bad. Surprise parties are usually a pretty good thing, and for the surprise to work, we usually have to deceive the guest of honor. Then here's the really interesting part. The bitterest deception is when we deceive ourselves. There is no defense against self-deception. And I think the elitists, the power seekers, that's their whole method of operation is self-deception. That's what powers them. That's what motivates them. It's the mutual delusion of self-deception that powers the elites into this globalist utopia they think they're going to get, even though in every case where it's been tried, it's turned out tragically. I mean, millions of people have been killed over this self-deception.
Yeah, that makes sense. Yeah. Just so sad.
And I'm hanging with you a lot. I've been thinking about this all weekend and over time. So I don't expect you to or anybody to sort of go, just come back with an immediate thought. But that would be impossible. So I just kind of want to toss this up. But what I'm really after at this point is this is making sense because I'm trying to pull together a lot of different things. I could go on. But I want to switch a little bit over, but you can read this article and see what you think. And then we'll get to the next one. Actually, I think what I'm going to do now is play our Santa Rosa Volunteers. I've got the next one pretty much ready to go. I just have to record it. So I'm going to play part six, the Anti-Federalist number six, the first part. And today I'm going to make the second part, and I'll have that for you tomorrow. So let me just play that. We'll be back in a few minutes and with another article. And then we have another article after that, which is the main one. I might have to carry that over a couple of days. We'll see. And then Dr. Pry is going to be at the top of the next hour. So listen to this and we'll be back. And that's what I want in a little bit. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments. Insights into our founding documents, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers here in Santa Rosa County, Florida. Santa Rosa Volunteers is available at their website, srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Anti-Federalist Number 6 was written officially under the name Sentinel, which is a collaboration of writers. This one is pure genius, so much so that I hardly need to comment except to present the most brilliant passages. I encourage you to read the whole of Anti-Federalist Number 6, as it is quite short, and in that brevity lies its power. It was published January 16, 1788. It begins, "The evils of anarchy have been portrayed with all the imagery of language in the growing colors of eloquence. The affrighted mind is thence led to clasp the new Constitution as the instrument of deliverance, as the only avenue to safety and happiness. To avoid the possible and transitory evils of one extreme, it is seduced into the certain and permanent misery necessarily attendant on the other." This is a great summation of what the much longer-winded Alexander Hamilton and John Jay were trying to hide in obfuscating yet colorful language. But essentially, that's it. Adopt the Constitution as is, or it's all over. America will cease to exist as we know it. The author then posits, if it's all over, if we don't immediately embrace the Constitution, and we descend into decadence and anarchy, is that really the worst possible outcome? Continuing on, Sentinel says this, "If anarchy, therefore, were the inevitable consequence of rejecting the new Constitution, it would be infinitely better to incur it, for even then there would be at least the chance of good government rising out of the licentiousness but to rush at once into despotism because there is a bare possibility of anarchy ensuing from the rejection or from what is yet more visionary, the small delay that would be occasioned by a revision and correction of the proposed system of government is so superlatively weak, so fatally blind, that it is astonishing any person of common understanding should suffer such an imposition to have the least influence on his judgment. In more modern language, stop filling the people with BS propaganda and tell the truth, because your lies aren't working. Then Sentinel presents the most brilliant observation into the fawning over and acceptance of the opinions of so-called, quote, experts, simply because they have risen to preeminent status. And that status alone is all that is needed to justify their aims, goals, and opinions. This mistake is the basis for the entire acceptance of government response to COVID, where clearly the experts are doing everything wrong, but want you to believe it's right, even after hundreds of thousands of people have died needlessly. But it's okay because they are experts, and they know best. Sentinel continues, but when I view among such converts men otherwise preeminent, it raises a blush for the weakness of humanity that these, her brightest ornaments, should be so dim-sighted to what is self-evident to most men, that such imbecility of judgment should appear where so much perfection was looked for. This ought to teach us to depend more on our own judgment and the nature of the case than upon the opinions of the greatest and best of men who, from constitutional infirmities or particular situations, may sometimes view an object through a delusive medium. But the opinions of great men are more frequently the dictates of ambition or private interest. Could anything more true be said today? This paper is so good, so full of richness, so prophetic as to what is happening today, that I'm going to hold at this the first paragraph and pick it up again next week with more of this amazing analysis, not only of what might happen with the ratification of the Constitution, but what actually did. The anti-federalists, it appears, were right. So now, what should we do? The source for the Federalist Papers is federalistpapers.org. The anti-federalist papers are from selfeducatedamerican.com. The Articles of Confederation are from usconstitution.net. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with Founding Moments, sponsored by Santa Rosa Volunteers. Their website is srv1776.com. That's srv1776.com. Please share this report to anyone who needs it. Action Radio, dedicated to fixing everything. That's my new one. I'm having fun with that. Let's bring Gene back here real quickly, and then I have another article to tantalize, tempt you, and otherwise perplex you with. Any thoughts so far, Gene? Any sort of overall of where we're going with the sort of analysis of them and us and what we can do with us to make us better to analyze them?
No, it's been interesting so far. Yeah.
Okay, good.
I'm still processing it all. As I said, I still have a hard time comprehending the degree of what's going on and allowed to go on.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that amazes me too, is that, where are the geldings? You know, there's no point having a Republican Party when they basically are, you know, we need stallions. We don't need geldings, you know, and I'm not talking about just the men, but the idea of a castrated Republican Party that refuses to act in its own interest, that sits back while you have 48 Democrats and two independents, 50 Republicans, and yet the Democrats are in control. Yeah, I know that's a Senate rule, but I don't care. They said nothing about it. There are so many things that they could be doing. They didn't have to authorize, President Nobody on the evening of January 6th. They could have said, you know what, we've had a problem. We have to evaluate what happened here. Let's pick up the count tomorrow. But they didn't do that. Okay. They could have been in California. I got Kyle on the line right now. They could have been in California, you know, watching every post office, which are basically, voting centers now. They could have been there watching everything that happened. They could have had representatives of every state Republican organization there to do something about it, and they didn't. They could have had people all over Georgia for those two bogus Senate elections, which gave the Democrats, 50. And they probably, legitimate, I'd say maybe what, 35, 40 of the senators might actually have been elected honestly, but I mean, that's just a guess. But what I'm saying is there's no way that those two from Georgia got there legitimately. And then yet the Republicans say nothing. The reconciliation bills that aren't reconciliation bills. they're standalone budget bills that they just made up. The idea that you can spend $5 trillion when the government takes in $3 trillion in revenue. That's insane. That's irrational. That's economic treason. And yet where are the geldings? They're not there. So we have, if you want to know why it's allowed to happen, it's by design. And as I said, over the weekend, Trump was elected by the people and Biden was installed by the government. And that's the difference. This is the way the government wants to run the country. All right. And we have to stop that. And the best way I see to stop that is to write laws that don't let them run the country. Basically, this is why I do the things that I do. Okay. Can we do it? I don't know. This has never been tried before. We're in unexplored territory here. We are every bit the new founders that the founders were, fighting the British. The difference is that, the British like openly hang people. And I don't see that happening from our own government yet. And I don't expect it to, but, they will take away your livelihood. They will block you out of the internet. They will basically erase your character, dox you, remove you as a person in terms of your ability to say or do anything, isolate you. They don't have to kill you. The British did, way back in the 1700s, and that's how they did things. Take you to Nathan Hale. Give me – no, it wasn't – one of them that, he was killed. He was a spy. Nathan Hale said, I didn't want to get my founders confused. I regret that I have but one life to give for my country. I think it was like 19. They hung him, for advocating America. Okay? Well, that's conviction. Right. You don't find that kind of conviction. It just doesn't exist today like that. But that's the problem. The problem is that we have geldings and we have Marxists. And you cannot, and you have a government that installed the government. Well, government has, the tyranny, I would define tyranny as the government giving itself power. Okay. And it goes back to the Supreme Court with Marbury versus Madison. You look at the Supreme Court, which gave themselves the power to have judicial review, to make policies, regulations, and take, what they consider unjust and make dictates for the nation. And that goes all the way from, way back, the liberty of contract stuff, all the way through, when the Supreme Court authorized slavery, which they did. They didn't. You didn't see a case against slavery until, the Civil War ended slavery. The Supreme Court did, even though, keeping a human being in bondage is I don't think it gets more unconstitutional than that. So they don't have a really good track record. So they gave themselves the power to review what they wanted. So I put something on Facebook this weekend. Should the Supreme Court have to prove that they have standing before being allowed to take a case? And their standing would be proved by Article 3. In other words, by what standards do we put on the Supreme Court to allow them to take certain cases? Okay, there's a whole new thought for you. I was thinking about writing some legegislation in terms of the no vaccine mandates. What do we do about what about these vaccine mandates? Well, what if we made body autonomy a civil right? What if we put body autonomy as a civil right, and such that if a company or a government tried to give you a vaccine mandate to put a foreign dangerous substance in your body, you could say that's against my civil rights. And the Civil Rights Commission would actually have to, void that. So you actually have the government working for you against the government and against large corporations that are going with the government, to make money and just go along with whatever they're just trying to, the wokeness going along. So these are the sort of things that we need to start talking about and put, but we don't just talk about them. We actually put them down as bills and then submit them and say, here, Congress, what do you think of that? And so that's how that goes. Let me, pretty sure this is Kyle here. I'm just going to do a quick check. Or I don't know if you already talked to him or not.
No.
All right. This will only take me a second here. Yep, thought so. Okay, let's bring Kyle on and see if he's been listening ahead of time or just kind of picked up the show. Kyle, have you been with us for long? Did you pick up the first hour, or are you just joining us now?
I've heard the last 4 minutes of gospel, and all I have to say is amen.
Well, thank you. Okay. Well, I'm going to continue on here with the next article. So the first hour, you want to go back and catch the podcast. I know it's early for you out there on the West Coast. But the title of the show today, Sun Tzu, The Art of War with China and Knowing Your Country. And we went through the principles of Sun Tzu and how they apply to what's happening. I'm getting a little background noise. You got a teletype in the background there? Something's going on.
Oh, I was just stirring a little something. Sorry.
No, that's okay. Well, we get all the background noise. All right, so let me go to my second article here. And Kyle, I'm going to leave you on the line, and feel free to jump in here. This is by Lee Smith.
Oh, by the way, let me jump in and say something real quick. I just watched an hour and 10 minutes with some guy who knows China really well from Epoch Times TV thing that they're doing. And all I can say is the long and short of it all is, they're in much trouble as we are financially. So I think this whole thing is nothing to worry about. Everybody's printing money. Japan's been printing money since the 70s. Russia's broke forever. We're all in this together.
Well, and I don't know if that's by design or that's by accident. In other words, is it easier to take the antidepressant or work on your problems? You know,
that's a good question. But you know, Greg, but you know, and also too, does it even matter? I mean, the big picture of it is what I'm starting to realize is I've been trying to get out of my depression because I, like you, think of everything, watch everything, la la la. So sometimes you get depressed because you think of everything. And if you see all this stuff that's happening and you focus on the news, which, of course, I try not to, and I cancel my TV. I don't watch TV anymore, cancel all my newspapers, la la la. So you don't watch negative anymore. You get positive again. And then you start focusing on what you need to focus on. You realize all of this stuff is drama. It's all drama. We just get back to your life, folks. And I just copied off one thing I want you to think about. Life is beautiful when you know what to ignore. I just saw this guy. I think he's on one of our clubs that you're on Facebook. And there's this picture of these two guys in prison, and they're both looking out the window at the view. And the guy on the left paints the picture of the bars that he's looking through. And the guy on the right shows you a picture of the blue and the clouds. And so then the quote is, life is beautiful when you know what to ignore. So ignore the bars, and the other guy saw what was in the background, right? If we ignore drama, if we ignore the media, the lying 24-hour news, it's all good. It's all happy. We're already cured. Now, what you're doing is amazing, and I love it. And new laws, yes, so we don't get into this trouble again, because it's, you know, because of, well, we need less laws, but good laws, which, you know, you like.
Well,
you,
see, a lot of the things we do abolish laws, departments, you know, entire you know, agencies and things like that. Yeah. Well, let me give you some real quick. These are interesting points. I disagree with you in that more information is good, and you could be selective about it. I wouldn't ignore the news or turn it off because, you know, you have to know what these people are doing. But the question is, it's the news that gives you the insights. Are you listening to fluff?
Greg,
are you listening to propaganda?
I agree with what you just said, but you also have to know your personality. I agree with what you just said, but you also have to know your personality. And some people's personalities, like a little bit of mine, I have a lot of femininity in me or something of this. I worry too much about the world. And if you're a big picture person.
I think that's femininity.
Whatever it is. Okay, you're right. Okay, all right, fine, whatever. I worry too. I think of my mother. My dad just got the job done. My dad brought the money home in my world, back in my world. That was only my world. I'm sorry. I confuse my world with a lot of people's world. So anyway, I'm a big picture person. And when you think of the big picture, if you watch drama too much and confuse it, well, I guess I should just say as I have now, maybe I could turn the television back on. I don't know.
Okay. Let me hold you right there for a second. I want to get into this article here a little bit and do the second part because we only have we have less than an hour before Dr. Pry joins us. So I got – let me hold you up for a bit. I'm going to bring, you know, Jeannie come on and call it. The second article of the three that I wanted to cover this morning, The 30 Tyrants. And this is the deal that the American elite chose to make with China has a precedent in the history of Athens and Sparta. And this is by Lee Smith, February 3rd, 2021. It's in a website called Tablet. And so what I found so interesting about this is we started talking about, you know, if we're ever going to defeat China and do as Sun Tzu said, you know, win the war before any shots are fired. We have to understand them as they understand themselves. And what that involves in this case is understanding the sellout to China by our elite. So this is the second part of what I wanted to cover. And as he starts off, he says, in Chapter 5 of The Prince, Niccolo Machiavelli describes three options for how a conquering power might best treat those it has defeated in war. The first is to ruin them. The second is to rule directly. The third is to create, quote, therein a state of the few, which might keep it friendly to you. Okay. Now you look at, basically we've got World War One, World War Two, and what China's trying to do to us. Okay. So the first is to ruin them. This is what happened in World War One. The Allies ruined Germany. Okay. They destroyed the German economy. They made reparations so prohibitively expensive, there's no way for the German economy to recover. So what happened? Well, you got Adolf Hitler in World War Two. So that doesn't work. Okay. The second is to rule directly. Okay. Well, that's what the United States did with Japan after World War II. MacArthur ran Japan. They created a Western, you know, constitution similar to ours in philosophy. Japan became a free republic, economic powerhouse. And yeah, they have problems today with the, you know, economics, but that's the market. That's how it goes. Okay. So rule directly is an option, but it's a limited option. You can't do it. Obviously it didn't work in Afghanistan. It totally screwed up. We tried to rule them, create a Western democracy from a bunch of goat herders with 5-year-old wives. It doesn't work. Okay. That's what the Taliban won. There was nothing to win there, especially since our own State Department gave them a Sharia law constitution back in 2004. We covered that on the show too. The third one is the one that intrigues me. The third is to create therein a state of the few, which might keep it friendly to you. And you look at what China's done with China Joe, and you look at Milley, whose counterpart in China, he reports to, not President Trump, during Trump's first term. And you look at these people, and they ask, you know, who are their counterparts? Who do you think that the Secretary of State Blinken reports to? He's a former Biden aide. Is he Secretary of State or Secretary for, you know, Biden's, you know, moronic whims? Or is he really answering to Obama? Certainly not answering to the American people, nor the dictates of the State Department. Defense Secretary, is he defending our country? Hardly. He's woke. He's being the politically correct thing. Mark Milley, you know, the white guy that's talking about white rage and white supremacy, I don't even think he knows he's white. There's some problems here. There's some serious problems with these people. But they're all kowtowing to China. Our businesses kowtow to China. Our universities kowtow to China. China has taken the leaders in academia, entertainment, in sports like the NBA. They've taken over they've created basically a shadow government for themselves that reports to them, and they've practiced number three. They're in a state of the few, which might keep it friendly to you. Let me bring Kyle back here and see if Gene wants to join us at this point. Kyle, what do you think so far?
Going by that hour and a half thing I watched, we are now, Apple at least, is moving a lot of their production of the iPhone to India. I think it's starting to happen.
What's starting to happen? Getting away from China?
In other words, the big boys, you know, the globalists, not just our government, but big leaders are realizing we're using China too much, and they're starting. So you're talking about they're starting to get away from China. China doesn't have to make everything. In other words, I think that Russia, China, the big four or five countries are all in cahoots together, and we help get China off its butt and build all those places and everything else.
The elite of the countries are in cahoots. See, I think of this as a globalist club. And so you take Russian elite, Chinese elite, French elite, you know, German elite, elite of any country.
Right.
You know, you put these folks together. They talk to each other. They don't talk to their own people. And they certainly don't talk to us American folks. Even our own government doesn't talk to us. Let me continue.
Right.
Let me hold you up for a little bit here. This is interesting. Like I say, I'm trying to balance. I want to get you guys in the conversation. Gene, like I say, hit the hotel bell if you need me. Otherwise, Gene, do you have a comment right now so far?
Well, I was just going to go off of what was said about the Apple and going to India. I think with all the like someone that needs a new refrigerator, new washer, dryer, new stove, whatever, computer parts, and that certain car parts are not being able to get them because they're made from out of the country. I think that should be our wake-up call that we need to start producing stuff here in this country for ourselves and not rely so much on other countries.
But I think if we get back to where I think we need to go, it's a philosophical thing. Philosophically, we need to understand the value of producing here, of having Americans working. I think the seduction of the bottom line, the dollar, you know, that's why it's easier to print money than create wealth. You know, that's why it's easier. And I just this popped in my head, you know, it's easier to take an antidepressant than work on your problems. You know, right. The easy solution is not necessarily, in fact, I believe seldom is the best solution. So let's look at this in terms of our philosophy. Why is it philosophically more acceptable for our elitists to become this global club, you know, and subvert individual rights and basically, you know, and to sacrifice Americans to the altar of the pharmaceutical needle and the printed dollar? Why is that? Why are they even thinking about in terms of that? And why are people allowing, you know, that to happen? I don't, as much as I can, you know, I'm one person, but when I think about it, everybody's one person. So that's no excuse either. All right. Let me go through more of this article and then I'll bring Kyle and Jean back in. See, he says the example of Machiavelli gives of the last is the friendly government Sparta established in Athens upon defeating it after 27 years of the war in 404 BC. For the upper caste of an Athenian elite already contemptuous of democracy, the city's defeat in the Peloponnesian War confirmed that Sparta's system was preferable. So, and this, you can look at that now, that our elitists think that the Chinese communist system is preferable to a republic. Obviously, otherwise they'd be pushing a republic on China instead of bringing a Chinese communist, you know, dictatorship to America. That's I absolutely believe they believe that preferable. The article says it was a high-spirited military aristocracy ruling over a permanent servant class, the Helots, who were periodically slaughtered to condition them to accept their subhuman status. You can see, you know, I mean, metaphorically, they're doing the same thing here. Conservatives are character assassinated to sort of keep us in place. Well, guess what? It's not working. But the parallels to history are, I think, undeniable. He says Athenian democracy, by contrast, gave too much power to the lowborn. Well, I got news to you. That's exactly what Action Radio is going to do. We're going to give, you know, all the power to every individual citizen to have the potential, not the right or the ability, but the potential to create a law that sits on the president's desk and then becomes part of our freedom. That's what this is all about. So when it comes to the so-called lowborn, yeah, that's me. Here we go. All right. The article says the pro-Sparta oligarchy used their patrons' victory to undo the rights of citizens and settle scores with their domestic rivals, exiling and executing them and confiscating their wealth. Well, I think we can see parallels to that today. I don't have to go through all the things that are happening with the folks that walked into the Capitol, how Trump is treated and how conservatives are treated and how just the absolute contempt that these elitist globalists have for Americans and what we believe in. Article says the Athenian government, disloyal to Athens' laws and contemptuous of its traditions, there you go, that's the Democrats and the Marxists, was known as the 30 Tyrants, and understanding its role and function helps explain what's happening in America today. So I'm going to read a little bit more of this, and then I'm going to bring in our commentary. It says, for the last column, I spoke with the New York Times' Thomas Friedman about an article he wrote more than a decade ago during the first year of Barack Obama's presidency. His important piece documents the exact moment when the American elite decided that democracy wasn't working for them. Let me say that again. The exact moment when the American elite decided that democracy wasn't working for them, blaming the Republican Party for preventing them from running roughshod over the American public. They migrated to the Democrat Party in the hopes of strengthening the relationships that were making them rich. He says a trade consultant told Friedman, the need to compete in a globalized world has forced the meritocracy, the multinational corporate manager, the Eastern financier, and the technology entrepreneur to reconsider what the Republican Party has to offer. That's why they're now geldings, okay? Can't do anything. Back to the article. In principle, they have left the party, leaving behind not a pragmatic coalition, but a group of ideological naysayers. Yeah, Republicans are great at what they don't want. They have no idea what they do want. And that's our job to sort of fill in that void. That's why I created Action Radio. Article says, in the more than 10 years since Friedman's column was published, the disenchanted elite that the Times columnist identified has further impoverished American workers while enriching themselves. Yeah, that's why all our jobs left, right? The one-word motto they came to live by was globalism. That is the freedom to structure commercial relationships and social enterprises without reference to the well-being of the particular society in which they happen to make their livings and raise their children. Okay, that's them, you know, in the country of us. Back to the article. Undergirding the globalist enterprise was China's ascension to the World Trade Organization in 2001. For decades, American policymakers and the corporate class said they saw China as a rival, but the elite that Friedman describes saw enlightened Chinese autocracy as a friend and even as a model. We've been talking about that all morning, okay? Which was not, back to the article, which was not surprising given that the Chinese Communist Party became their source of power, wealth, and prestige. Think about all the whole Cold War, the whole ideological, we've got to stop the communists. And what are our so-called globalist elites doing? They are the communists. They are the Chinese Communist Party. They are the Chinese Communist Party here. They, the friends, the 30 tyrants, the whole thing that's from the Sun Tzu, that third part of that, of how to co-opt everything. And I don't have the quote. I'm not going to go back to it, but go back in the show. He says, why did they trade with an authoritarian regime and send millions of American manufacturing jobs off to China, thereby impoverishing working Americans? Because it made them rich. Because it made them rich. That's why they did it. Why is Big Pharma and Dr. Fauci killing 700,000 plus Americans? I don't know what the truth, because the numbers are all why? Because it makes them rich. That's it. That is their only reward. They have no soul. They're empty. They're empty black holes of eternal selfishness. They don't care. They don't have any allegiance to this country. They don't have any allegiance to the individual. They don't have any allegiance to anything except their own power and wealth. That makes them empty. And empty people should not be running this country. And if they wouldn't have been, they had to steal it. And that's why the election happened the way it did. That's why they had to demonize Trump and everybody else, for especially using January 6th as their vehicle. That's why they have to destroy the idea that you would challenge them. Well, I got news for you. I'm going to challenge them every day. And to my dying breath, I'm going to be challenging them. Hopefully that's a long way off so that I can do a lot of challenging. But anyway, I digress. So it made them rich. So it says they salved, that's S-A-L-V-E-D, they salved their consciences by telling themselves they had no choice but to deal with China. It was big, productive, and efficient, and its rise was inevitable. And besides, the American workers hurt by the deal deserved to be punished. Who could defend a class of reactionary and racist ideological naysayers standing in the way of what was best for progress? And then I bring up the Trump quote when he says, they're not after me, they're after you, I'm just in their way. And that's why they had to get rid of Trump. The global elitists, the people that want to be in charge, the empty black holes of eternal selfishness, the folks that have appointed themselves the 30 tyrants, cooperating with China to create their better world, to have Americans being Americans and represented by Trump. A little bit more and then I'm almost done. Returning those jobs to America, along with ending foreign wars and illegal immigration, was the core policy promise of Donald Trump's presidency. Got it? Ending foreign wars and illegal immigration, okay? And the source of his surprise victory in 2016. I wasn't surprised. I was really glad, but I wasn't surprised. Trump was hardly the first to make the case that the corporate and political establishment's trade relationships with China had sold out ordinary Americans. Yeah, he'd been doing that for like 20 or 30 years. Anyway, former Democrat congressman and 1988 presidential candidate Richard Gephardt was the leading voice in an important but finally, not very influential group of elected Democrat Party officials and policy experts who warned that trading with a state that employed slave labor would cost American jobs and sacrifice American honor. The only people who took Trump seriously were the more than 60 million American voters who believed him when he said he'd fight the elites to get those jobs back. Almost done. Last paragraph. What he called the swamp, the deep state, whatever you want to call it, appeared at first just to be a random assortment of industries, institutions, and personalities that seemed to have nothing in common outside of the fact they were excoriated by the newly elected president. But Trump's incessant attacks on that elite gave them collective self-awareness. Okay, know yourself, Sun Tzu, right? Know your enemy, know yourself. Stuff all comes back on itself. This is why I'm going over it. Okay? Collective self-awareness as well as a powerful motive for solidarity. Together, they saw that they represented a nexus of public and private sector interests, in other words, fascism, that shared not only the same prejudices and hatreds, cultural tastes and consumer habits, but also the same center of gravity, the U.S.-China relationship, and so the China class was born. Connections that might have once seemed tenuous or non-existent now became lucid under the light of Trump's scorn and the reciprocal scorn of the elite that loathed him. Let's bring back Kyle. Kyle, what do you think?
let's see here. I had two or three thoughts as it went along.
Notes.
Which one? which one to bring up first. Again, I want to make sure your audience knows that I think all is good. I'm really at a sense of peace here, even though our country's in turmoil, it seems, and, you know,
I'm
we are divided.
I'm in a sense of agitation.
Well, you know, well, yeah, well, because you want things to go faster than they're going. One thing I would remind everybody is...
I always want that, Kyle.
Right. Well, one thing I would remind everybody is just look at the big picture. When I think of a Republican, I think of an old traditional male like my father. And the male's mind is much more logical in generally. If you study minds, generally speaking, I speak in generalizations, I'm in marketing, the male mind is much more logical than the female mind. And the female mind is amazing, and the male mind's amazing. All minds are amazing. But the female mind thinks more like a Democrat, okay? And the Democrat is an emotional mind, a helping mind, a nurturing mind, a mothering mind. And what the elites have noticed, what I've noticed the elites have noticed is, and it showed up really clearly when you watched the 16 Republicans stand up on stage when Trump fought against them. Now, he beat them, and he won, and he was victorious, but there were four others that could have been president. We all know it. And at least three, at maybe five or six, that were logical and confident enough and carried themselves in a way that they could have been president. They could have got away with it. Now, compare that to the Democrats. And this is what the elites know. The Democrats didn't have any. So the Democrats' mind is too emotional. The Democrats' mind generally is too caring and too nurturing. And mother is amazing, and mother does most. Mother does all in a family. But dad rules the roost. Dad comes home. I'm generalizing, folks. I know you some
of
you
have
mothers.
Yeah, and I want you to sum up, too, because I want to come back to the article. I can't wait to hear what Gene has to say. So go
well,
ahead.
Anyway, this is my whole comment, and I listen to you for hours sometimes and never get to
yeah,
speak.
But I got a lot to cover.
So
it's my show.
Yeah, I know so. What you have, and la, 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 la. You always have a lot to cover. A lot to say. It's because you
right.
like to talk, and so do I, so let me talk. So my point is to my conversation
briefly.
At the end here, which is I'm going to come around to, which is the closing of this is the elites realize that the Democratic Party has little to offer. That's why they create AOCs, because AOC is a puppet, and she is taught what to say by the elites, and that's what the Republican Party will get to if they're not careful. But I don't think it's going to happen because there's too much logic and too much brilliance in the Republican Party, even though they are geldings, as you so poetically put it. I call them frickin' wimps. But anyway, the Independent Party is 42% of America. I'm not worried about it. Most of America is registered as an independent, so I'm not worried about the 27% Republican and 29% Democrat that are too clueless to still remain registered as either party. 42% of America has independently registered themselves. So America has figured this out. So now you just need to put your laws together to put it all together.
Okay, that sounds good. Gene?
No, that's good. Yeah.
We have fun. I love Kyle on the show, but so we're both talk show hosts. So it's kind of, but this is the beauty of Blog Talk Radio is that I got the buttons. I can do things here. It's so much fun. All right, let me get to the last article here. We've got about 32 minutes before Dr. Pry gets here, and we may have to take this up tomorrow. So I found the article that started me on this journey to create the show this morning is in Revolver. And it's becoming one of my new favorite sources here. So this is October 23rd. So this is 2 days ago. Chinese President Xi's secret philosopher analyzed America, and his findings could reverse our country's decline. Okay. So what this article does is it looks at how China looks at us as a way to analyze us so that we can fix us so we can defeat China. Okay. And this is what I find so fascinating about it, because this guy's the ideas person of China. And of course, I'm hoping to be the ideas person of the United States, but we'll see how that goes. And read a little bit of the front, and then I'm going to get to the main part about us, just to give you some background. He says, China's rise presents, let me see, did I get the author here? Who's the author? It doesn't really give one. I think it's just by all of them. Revolver. So anyway, look at Revolver. China's rise presents the U.S. with a rival that is harder to understand than any who came before. China, with its challenging language, thousands of years of civilization, and bespoke mixture of Marxism with local innovations, is far more alien than Britain, Germany, or Russia could ever be. Even Japan, with its aggressive adoption of Western mores since the 1860s, is far more comprehensible than, quote, the Middle Kingdom, as the Chinese call themselves. It's no surprise, then, that Western takes on China, its goals, and its priorities often feel more like guesswork than substantive analysis. And we explain exactly why that is in the first hour. Okay, so as folks listen to this podcast, by the time I'm done, hopefully this will be a really comprehensive picture for you that you can take and go, oh, that's interesting. Anyway, he says, but Americans hoping to understand the new global superpower have one excellent asset. A hitherto unknown power behind Xi's throne has written an entire book revealing exactly what he thinks of America. The book is America Against America by Wang Huning. That's Wang, W-A-N-G, Huning, H-U-N-I-N-G, the secretive gray eminence of the Chinese Communist Party. Remember, have you ever watched the movie Patton? George C. Scott has a scene where he defeats Rommel in the desert. And Rommel wrote a book, you know, The Tank in Warfare or something to that effect. Guess who read it? Patton. Okay. So then you see the scene of George C. Scott saying, you know, hey, Rommel, I read your damn book. German tanks are blowing up. Well, it's the same thing here. So you got to read their book. You know, you got to read their book on us to understand them. And this is what this whole first couple of hours is about. He says, anybody who wants to understand modern China, how it sees America, and how it plans to overtake America by avoiding America's weaknesses, has a duty to familiarize themselves with this book. Anyone who wishes to reverse America's decline will be studying Wang's thought. Okay, so it's here we have a recent article in Palladium. Said Wang Huning much prefers the shadows to the limelight. Insomniac and a workaholic, former friends and colleagues describe him, the bespectacled, soft-spoken political theorist, as introverted and obsessively discreet. He goes on to talk about him. I don't care about that. This is Wang's role, skipping down a bit, Wang's role as a top ideological theorist. See, we don't have ideological theorists, I think, in the same way, because people don't study ideology. They just assume that it is. That's the thing. The biggest problem with our globalists is they assume that their ideology isn't even an ideology. It's just their way of life. So it just is, and it is for everybody. And that's one of their fall downs is believing their own propaganda and their own self-delusions. Okay. Wang's role as top ideological theorist of a rising superpower would be interesting no matter what, but it is even more so thanks to the events of the last 6 months. Along with its growing economic and military power, China has also launched a dramatic social engineering effort, where have you heard that before, meant to avoid the catastrophic social rot that has gripped America, South Korea, and other wealthy nations. Over the last few months, China has limited children to 3 hours of video games per week, shut down private school tutoring industry. There you go. Compulsory government education. This is what we need to get rid of. You know, anyway, this is banned TV show starring sissy men. This is what Kyle's going to – I get what you get. I bring Kyle back for this alone. Banned TV show starring sissy men and all reality TV shows starring the children of celebrities. Restricting advertising for expensive cosmetic surgery. Okay, let's bring Kyle back here. In fact, I despise the term cisgender because I think it derives from sissy to be particularly offensive to straight men. There is no such thing as cis anything. It's not a word. It's a made-up word. So what do you think of China limiting sissy men? I can't wait to hear what you think of that.
Steve Hughes being offended. Great video for all to watch. It's 2 minutes long. You can't see it on a radio show. You have to do it at home. Type in Steve Hughes. He's an Australian. He's a hippie-looking guy, and he's up on stage. It's a red and blue background. Pick the 2-minute, 20-second version, and he shows you how if you're offended in 2 minutes, you're an idiot. You're the wimp. You're the little boy. You're the little girl. So what humans need to know is, you know, do the wimp test. Watch Steve Hughes being offended. It makes complete sense. Every corporation across America should have this video in their office. And somebody comes in to make a cry about somebody in their office. Barbara's offending me. Tom is, you know, I don't get along with Tom. Okay, ma'am, watch this video twice. Let me know if you're, you know, the problem.
Okay, well, let's bring this back to China, though, in terms of the Chinese government getting non-masculine men out of the public eye, out of the entertainment system. That's what I was really curious about. And then we get to Gene, and we got leaders on the line. Okay, interesting.
Well, and or just make sure that you, you know, I mean, nobody's against, I don't think anybody's against gays. I don't think anybody's against lesbians. I don't think anybody's against heteros, you know, trans,
well,
if you want to be a trans.
That's not the
point. Well, you know, be it's true. All right. Some people are. Be who you want to be, but, you know, the Asians are just like us. We should, you know, make sure that a young boy, 30 and under, knows what a man is today. I mean, John Wayne set the level, right? You didn't think you were going to get there. But John Wayne showed you this is a man, level 10. So if you could get to level 7 or 8 as a young boy, you're happy because you're almost there. You're almost the man. Well, now what's the level? I mean, you know, let me ask you, Greg, who do you think is the most John Wayne-like? Get rid of Clint Eastwood because he's another graded version. Forget Clint Eastwood. Who is another man that shows you what a man should be?
That is a really great question. I honestly don't know because I don't think of necessarily entertainers I was Donald Trump. You want me to pull someone out of
there? There you go. That's
Donald
a good
Trump.
One. That is
Donald
that's,
Trump.
That's a really
he is
good.
He's a man's
yeah, okay.
man. He is the character. He's like you know, the sort of, and this is why I think he's so hated, because ideologically
right?
he is everything that the elite are against. He's an individual. He believes in this country. He loves this country. He believes in God. You know, he doesn't see himself as all powerful. He doesn't need this job. He doesn't need the power. He doesn't need the money. You know, he's doing it because it's the right thing to do. He represents everything that this global elite that I'm talking about hates. So
and don't forget,
example.
The global elites are in cahoots with the left, which is in cahoots with femininity, which is in cahoots with mommy, which is cahoots with women.
Radical feminism.
Generally speaking, the left is sensitive. So they're sensitive. The fifth and sixth level feminists. Wonderful women don't get offended by what I say, Greg. Wonderful women know I'm right. Wonderful women know that I'm not against them. I'm against the fifth and sixth level feminist. I'm against the feminist woman that doesn't like a man and wants to deball him, which is running the left, which doesn't want Trump because Trump is an alpha male and a great man, and they're intimidated by that and or don't want it. The fifth and sixth feminist woman, not great women. Great women like Trump.
Okay, all right. I'm going to hold you up there a bit. I'm going to hold you up again because I want to get a quick comment from Gene, and I want to get Lita, and then we're going to go into the rest of this article. I've got about 25 minutes. I want to make sure I get, you know, more of it in. This is fascinating. So this is why I'm kind of limiting and sort of scheduling things. Gene, did you have a comment? Are you a wonderful woman?
I was going to say, you know, I don't care. People can be who they are. But what I want to say, though, is when you're talking about feminist women, I say, okay, let people be who they are, but I'm going to talk out of both sides of my mouth because I have no time for them. And the reason I say that is because when it fits their agenda, they will fight. I mean, you look at Kavanaugh and his confirmation hearing and how the feminists just spoke up like crazy. But then the female, and I forget her name now, that Biden supposedly assaulted, sexually assaulted. Oh, no.
Mm-hmm.
Oh, no. Nobody. The feminists ran from that. And I'm like, you know what? It shouldn't matter who it is. But if something – and we didn't know Kavanaugh either. Christina or whatever her name was. That
Christina Blasey Ford.
Who accused him of stuff. So it's like, okay, that was her viewpoint. Well, this other girl had a viewpoint on what Biden did to her. But no, right away, it's didn't happen. Or you look at Hillary Clinton and everything she did. Look what she did to Monica Lewinsky.
Oh, yeah. It's feminism is convenient for those who want to use it. Yeah. I'll hold you up there, too. I want to get a quick comment from Lita. No, I appreciate your comments. I really want to get to a certain amount accomplished. Lita, welcome to the show again. You have a comment so far here, or do you want to hang in for a bit?
Well, I'm in agreement with you, Greg, as far as Donald Trump setting the example of what a good man is. I mean, because Donald Trump has hired several. He's actually empowered women by hiring a lot of women. And so, to me, I saw that as empowering women. So I don't know why everyone
else. Let me ask you one quick question on that. Do you think Donald Trump hired women to promote women, or do you think he hired them because he thought they were – this is probably a rhetorical question. I'm sort of giving away to the end. Or do you think he hired women because they were the best at whatever particular job he was hiring for?
Well, I feel like, you know, he has fruit in that, and even in his business. I mean, look at his family. Look at his fruit. I mean, it doesn't matter.
So
his children.
I don't think he was hiring women because he wanted to promote women. I think he was hiring women because the women that he chose for those jobs were the best people for those jobs. I really believe that. Now,
exactly.
It could be a mixture of both, way. But I think definitely he's on that side. Okay, let me hold you up too. And so just hang in there, both of actually, we got Kyle, Lita, and Christine, our producer. Let me get to this next section of the article in Revolver, where he says, Wang sees America. This is a Chinese philosopher who's like analyzing us to help China, defeat us. Wang sees America in a values death spiral. He says, impressively, Wang is enormously well-read on American culture. At the time he wrote America Against America, he had clearly read more about American politics and society than most American PhDs. Wang's book is littered with summaries of American books that the typical Chinese reader has likely never heard of. He's near the end of this book. Wang speaks positively and at length about Alan Bloom's book, The Closing of the American Mind, and mulls whether a spiritual crisis exists at the heart of the American society, even as America externally seems at the apex of its success. I have to slow down. I'm getting too excited with this stuff. But that's the problem. What is really happening, does economic success hide a spiritual crisis? And I think that's really at the heart of what's going on in this country. He says Bloom's main idea is that today's university education no longer enables its subjects to grasp the traditional values that founded Western society. And again, as Dr. Pry pointed out several weeks ago, when the left talks about white supremacy, they're not talking about, white people ruling the world. They're talking about the supremacy of Western ideological thought, putting the individual first, having powers come from God, and a republic as opposed to any other form of government. They see that as the supremacy that they're trying to destroy. And understanding that, you understand how the left understands us. Okay, next paragraph. In the 1950s, cultural relativism succeeded in destroying the idea of Western centrism, but at the same time weakened the status of Western culture. Dominated by this spirit, university education resulted in young people with no concept of the past and no view of the future. In other words, they're empty, right? The universities responsible for conducting higher education do not provide knowledge of the glorious history of Western philosophy and literature. In other words, dead white guys, right? Students are unable to understand the order of nature and man's place in it through this knowledge. Universities do not provide the self-awareness needed for a serious learning process. What is the result? The younger generation knows very little about the classic works of Western history. Bloom said that once in class, he asked his students what book had impressed them the most. And surprisingly, none could name a masterpiece. One person said the Bible, but this book is not taught in college. Let me go on. Wang echoes Bloom's description of a vast nihilism gripping America's college-educated young adults, a worldview that could conceive of no unifying bedrock truth and consequently has nothing to build a society on top of. This is the problem. These people, they don't know where they came from, they don't know who they are, and they don't know where we're going. Okay, and so you put this in, we basically got a generation of morons. They're just completely lost, and you can replace that with anything. And there's a British philosopher, Chichester, who I've quoted several times on the show. He says, the danger not believing God is that people will believe in nothing. The danger is that they will believe in anything. And that's what's happening now. Back to the article. The decline of the traditional value system of the West will eventually hit democracy. Well, it should be a republic. There is no value system in society that can be used as a value system to guide individual decisions, and university education does not provide such a system. There is a very close relationship between ideas and social development, and when ideas end, so do the social institutions and ways of behaving guided by such ideas. I'm going to bring everybody back in for a little bit, give a couple more comments. That's basically, you got pretty much an idea where this article is going. And so I'm at Connell's Line Live, and Gene, you want to come back in. But here's the problem. The problem is we are our own spiritual decline. The idea of critical thinking is not the skills that allow you to think critically. It's the skills that allow you to criticize everything. Criticize God, criticize country, criticize the military, criticize the Constitution, criticize, anything you can think of. These students are being indoctrinated with the belief that they should be criticizing, that they are supreme, that their inherent beliefs and everything are wonderful, and they've lost the tradition, they've lost their anchor, they've lost their spiritual fundamental base that would allow us to continue. They've lost the value of the family. They've lost the value of everything that holds our society together. And from that, we're expected to generate leaders for the next generation. I think that's our problem. Lita, well, Lita, Kyle, and Jean. Lita, do you want to get in on this part of it here?
Yes, of course. And I unfortunately, Greg, I feel like it's a big grand scheme. I mean, look at what they've done to the communities, taking away the fathers with the welfare. They can't get married, otherwise they're going to be punished. And so they're promoted to take that father figure out in order for them to get their welfare.
Yeah.
I mean, it's everywhere. It's everywhere.
Interesting. Kyle?
Amen. I want to point out something that might help you speed things up, and I get this a lot when I talk because I'm from the East. Well, my dad's from the East Coast and my mom's from the West Coast, so I'm born and raised in California, but it's like I'm from Boston, Massachusetts, and my dad just called a spade a spade, so I call a spade a spade. And I think, again, I've been in the radio, whatever, business, I don't know, off and on for 10 years, and I'm not in it right now, but when I get back in it, if you guys don't know, come up with this and tell me what the verbiage you come up with, I think you should be able to come on to a show like this or anything and say, I am a good person, or I am of common sense, or I was raised right. In other words, my mom and dad taught me that everybody's equal. My mom and dad taught me that you treat everybody the same, right? So it's just easy, right? So, for instance, I talked about feminism, right? I'm not talking about
okay, I need to bring you back in the conversation because I don't – you know, we can talk about stuff more generally another time, but I need to bring you back into
all
the
right.
value
in closing,
system that we're
you should
about.
Come up with a word that makes it so that everybody gets that you're talking to a wonderful person, because I'm not against anybody. I'm against idiots, but other than that, I'm not against anybody, you know what I mean? And I'm not even against idiots if they care, you know what I mean? So somehow come up with that so you can just cut to the chase, because each time I come on these shows and do anything, and you throw out anything with any bit of, you know, make them people wonder, they think you're a chauvinist, or you're this, or you're that, or whatever. Yeah, it's like, I am so tired of that. So we should have some common little thing that I'm just a person, I'm just a normal, great, well-raised person.
Okay, sounds good. Jean?
I have nothing to add. I agree with what was said, though, totally. Yeah, it's very sad when they try to take the male out of the household, because boys and girls both need a father-type figure. And the sad thing is some people, could be the mother or the father, don't want to be involved with the child's life, but, and I'm talking kids. But the thing is, a lot of times, one or the other, because the things that happen, they are removed from the child's life, and it usually is the father figure.
Interesting. I think what I'm going to do is, like I said, I'm not going to try and rush through a huge amount of this article. I'm just going to let folks read it. I posted it on my page. You know, you can go back to the Revolver article. Revolver, that's the name of the website. Just a couple more things here, and then I'm going to say something, and then we're going to get to Dr. Peter Pride, where we're going to continue. I'm curious, you know, I sent him the article, unfortunately, too, this morning. He's had a chance to take a look at it. But here's a quote from Wang. He says, Wang sees American, quote, democracy as transactional to the point of being fake. So Wang writes in his book, and this is America Against America, the United States is also generally considered to be a Western democracy and a typical Western democracy at that, and Americans are proud of it. The Constitution, election campaigns, that's interesting, separation of powers, citizen participation in politics, and so on and so forth show one side of the system. But on the other side, can commoners really dominate the politics of this country? My analysis in this book shows that the powerful groups that dominate politics are above the common people. This is the author of the article saying his analysis shows that powerful groups dominate politics and are above the common people. So when you look at Action Radio, that's one of the things that this is one of the fundamental things that we need to change. You know, the Constitution says we the people. It doesn't say we the dominant. It doesn't say we the globalists. And so in an effort to actually have the Constitution live up to its principles, that's what I'm working on. That's what we do here. Okay. Let's see if I can find one other really juicy quote here. There's so much stuff here. I'm probably gonna hold it here and bring it back another time. We'll get one more here. He says he's talking as Wang visits various cities, he sees the ramifications of this nihilism everywhere. Going back to, let's just skip up a little bit. Even though America is far wealthier than China, it has more drug addiction, far more crime, and its families are crumbling apart. But instead of seeking values-based solutions to these problems, Wang's America sees these problems as technological puzzles that can be solved with the right program, the right invention, or if all else fails, a boatload of money. And I think he's right on as far as that goes. The quote is, in the face of intricate social and cultural problems, Americans tend to think of them as scientific and technological problems. Or is it a matter of money, which is the result of the spirit of commercialism, rather than a matter of people, of subjectivity? This is also true in the political sphere. the approach to the growth of Soviet power was to desperately develop equipment superior to the Soviet weapon systems, including the eventual proposed Star Wars program. So he wrote this back a bunch of years ago. He says, the way to deal with, this is back to the author of this article, says the way to deal with terrorism is to strike the other side with advanced attack forces. The way to deal with the threats in international waters is a powerful and well-equipped fleet. The way to deal with regimes you don't like is to provide the opposition with a lot of advanced weaponry. And it's just interesting that the way he's describing these things, you know, Wang talks about the culture and the social and everybody, the way things here, it's like Afghanistan was a weapons problem. You know, Afghanistan was a technological problem to be solved, you know, and we need to institute a Western democracy there, you know, and that'll solve our problems. And we can find a technical means to do that. But when you think about it, it really was a philosophical and spiritual problem. The philosophy was their religion, you know, Islam, you know, and the Taliban was like, we're going to create an Islamic Republic. That's what we're doing here. So the idea of Western, you know, Western technological solution to basically an Afghani institutionalized belief system was never going to work. And yet that's what we tried. So we don't see others as they see themselves. We don't see ourselves as we actually are. And we certainly don't know how the Chinese look to how the Chinese see us and understand us. So that gets very confusing. Lita, Kyle, and then we'll go to Gene, and then I want to put a little bit, and I'm exhausted. This has just been a wild couple of hours. Lita?
Well,
do you think we're missing the boat on social stuff or philosophy?
Oh, yeah. I was just with my Bible study group last night, and they studied the Founding Fathers' Bible, which is very interesting because it goes back to our Founding Fathers and how they did things and how they wrote things. And they prayed a lot. They gathered and they talked amongst and debated, and they always put God in. And so here's the thing. God sets a... And I'm a Christian. I'm all sold out to Jesus. So, without God, there's lawlessness. I mean, He sets the Ten Commandments. It's basic: do not steal, do not kill, do not. I mean, those are the basics.
Well, getting back to the article said about the college students not knowing anything. Do they not know that our entire legal code is based on the Ten Commandments? You know, you look at any of the laws of, you know, extortion and bribery and embezzlement, all that stuff, it comes back to thou shalt not steal. You know, look, thou shalt not kill, which is actually thou shalt not murder, is what it really is. You know, all your violent attacks come into that. So if you don't understand the Ten Commandments, you don't understand the basis of Western law and the code of the United States, you know, our laws. And when they get away from that and they start, you know, making things illegal like free speech, and all of a sudden they call it hate speech, and you can't say that. They've totally gotten away from not only does the Ten Commandments, you know, have Ten Commandments, it also has a lot of things that should not be made laws, you know, and the whole basis of free expression and freedom of religion, all those things that are not, you know, that the government cannot make into law is just as important as the things that they can and where our laws are based. But if you don't understand the difference between those two things, how do you have any kind of moral basis for any of your actions? And how do you have any moral decision power to decide the right way to go forward? I don't think you can. Kyle,
yeah.
Bring you in this here. Yeah. Oh, Kyle's, I guess he's not there. Gene, let's go to you. And then I got a little bit more here.
Oh, I'm here. I had my mic off.
Okay.
Don't forget to focus on what caused this problem. I'm Episcopalian. Okay. I'm a partying Catholic. I get the big picture here. But how did most of these young kids that they're not idiots. They have a trouble speaking because they spend too much time at home, and they have a trouble with this and that because they spend too much time on their computer. But a lot of priests left them awry, set them off on the wrong track. So I'll remind you of marketing real quick, and the church might want to consider doing this. When you have a problem with a product, you fix it. You make sure you fix it, like they did with drugs back in the day whenever that drug problem we had, they made new tops for drugs. So they fixed the problem, they acknowledged it, and they moved on. So now my question is, has the church fixed their pedophilia? Has the church fixed their problem with little boys? Has the church fixed themselves? Because these kids aren't idiots. They'll come back to the church. But you better make you know what well that the church has
again,
been fixed.
I think you're focusing on a particular problem instead of the philosophy of what created the church in the first place. Okay. Now I'm not.
That's
I'm not
fine.
Really,
you're on your
I'm
thought.
Really,
I'm on my
I'm
thought.
I'm not really great
but
on
you know
on
what
church
I mean. That's my
and,
thought.
Yeah, I know that. But I want to keep sort of you know within the topic as much as possible.
The topic. I'm on the same topic the gal was just talking about. Jesus, I'm just not saying it the way you want to hear it. My point is, in order to move forward, you have to admit you're wrong. In order to move forward, the church has to say publicly or somehow, we messed up. Please come back. Please.
Okay.
We know we gaffed hugely. The church gaffed, blew it, choked, let the people down, whatever you want to call it.
I think, yeah, I just, maybe I should think more about, you know, where you're going with things, but it just occurred to me that I think, you know, anyway, trying to focus. Jean, am I being too harsh? What do you think?
No, I get exactly what he's saying because it's true. I think it's true in a lot of ways, but I'm getting some backlash.
Yeah,
anyway,
getting feedback there. Okay.
I think that it's not only with the church, it's a lot of different things that have been, entities that have been doing that as far as, what the church has been doing, but I definitely think if you don't have faith, religion, I don't want to say religion, but faith, a belief, we're kind of screwed.
Well,
and how are you
going to
have faith and believe in something that doesn't act right?
That's true, but the thing is what I'm looking at is not the person. I'm looking at the what it represents. Like going to a church to me, I mean, years ago may have meant something. Now it's just a building because I feel I can be spiritual anywhere. And that's the thing, connection with a higher power.
Okay, but teach that to the young kid. I'm telling you what I think. And I think that the youth, the 30 and under, 25 and under, 40 and under, whatever it is, has been raised with the thought that, wow, if I become a choir boy, I might be treated wrong. And when I was a young kid, I never worried about that. I walked down the street towards the church with my family. I walked 3 blocks sometimes to go to our local church. Never thought that, wow, if I was a choir boy, I might be touched.
Well, we could say the same thing about kids going to school.
Oh, I understand,
you know,
the church has gone, you're exactly right. The church has gone the way of the public. The public in general is letting us down. So
but
the
I,
church is, just like anybody yeah. else, they're letting us down.
And I definitely think there was a lot of cover-up. And if they would have just been honest, but the thing is, that would have admitted something that they didn't want to admit to.
Yep, just like everybody else, just like your neighbor that's not honest and doesn't want to admit to it. We've all been a little less than, and here lies the problem. In order to move forward, we're all going to have to grow up a little, get our balls back, get our vajayjay back, get our guts back, get our humanity back.
True, very true. And I think now more than ever.
And I'm not anti-church. I mean, again, I'm Episcopalian. I'm a partying Catholic. I'm a light Catholic, I call it, right? Kind of like a light beer, you know. But I believe in an almighty source. I believe in karma. I believe you get back what you give. I mean, I believe. But, you know, it's hard for me to believe in my neighbor lately. It's hard for me to believe in certain members of my family lately. It's hard for me to believe in my government almost at all. Maybe 10% of my government I believe in. And my neighbors and I'm being so close to the Capitol, I've proven that. Our government is pathetic. But Teddy Roosevelt said back in 1906, we are the government, you and I. We are the government, you
and
I.
We need to remember that.
Yep. So it goes along with the old saying is that you get what you deserve. So we're getting what we deserve because we, not you, not Greg, not me, not necessarily anybody talking on this radio probably because we obviously care enough to change things. So it's probably not us. But generally speaking, we the people are not that impressive. We're greedy. We're takers. We want for nothing. I mean, it was raining. This huge rain came to California today, okay? I spent yesterday cleaning all the drains in my whole block. I walked around to clean a drain, I should have just cleaned one and been done, right? Because everybody else should have done theirs. I cleaned about 2, 3, 4, 15 of them. Do you think anybody came out and helped me? Do you think anybody came out and said, wow, you're doing that for me? Do you think anybody came out and said, hey, can I give you a hand?
No, but you're setting
the example. Let's focus on that.
You're
first, because Kyle's making an interesting point about the decline,
the
spiritual decline in this country. And I just want to ask, we've only got about a minute left before Dr. Price probably going to call in here. So when we talk about the third part of my show, we got Sun Tzu, The Art of War with China, and Knowing Your Country. I think Americans think they know this country. I don't think they know how other countries see us, and I don't think that we really have a good handle on where we are as a nation. I think the belief that this is the greatest country on earth is true, but I don't think anybody has any idea how great it could be if we actually followed our founding principles. So let me go through again, look at Lita, and then Kyle, and then Gene, and we'll see if Dr. Pry joins us at that point, and then we'll switch over to that. Lita, do you think we are who we think we are? And that's kind of a big question.
Here's the thing. I was a total different person before I accepted Christ into my heart, and he changed my heart. He changed my attitude. The more I sought him and read about him and had a relationship with God, the more I read the scriptures and things like that, it changed me. And so what you're talking about is when you go out and you go clean those gutters and everyone else doesn't, well, they don't have the same heart as you. As Christ is, so am I in this world. We are supposed to be the light and the salt and to the world. And we set the example by love, by caring, by accountability for each other as well. And so here's the thing. It doesn't have to be big steps. You can start like you are now in your own neighborhood. And it's just the little steps like that that show, wow, this guy actually cares. Perhaps you're setting seeds that you don't even know about that show Christianity. This is what we do because we care about our neighbors, love one another. Maybe they do not have that concept of that, but you do. You are setting the example. You are planting seeds. So just hold tight and keep doing what you're doing, but don't allow it to let your heart be bitter because religion has destroyed a lot of people. It's even hurt my heart. But I had to repent of those things and let it go and give it to God and let him take care of it. That's all good.
Okay. I got Dr. Pry on the line, so I want to get a really quick comment from Kyle to sum up, and then Gene, if you want to hop in here, and then we're going to talk national security and see if we can relate all this back to where we started, you know, with Sun Tzu, The Art of War with China, and Knowing Your Country, which is the title of the show today. Kyle, got a quick comment to sum up?
30 seconds. I'll try to make it. Amen to everything she just said. Amen to everything she just said. Amen. But I would add this. When you lose weight, sometimes it's because you changed the way you operate. It wasn't because you read some book. You just started doing things the right way. So when you get turned on to God, God helped you, yes, but sometimes it's because you started doing things differently. You started doing things the right way. And FYI, I've been doing my gutters for 15 years.
Interesting. Gene?
Amen to it all. Nothing to add.
Okay. Let's go on to Dr. Pry. What is national security? How much is enough? What about the cost? What are our adversaries doing? Who wins between the State Department and the Pentagon? How accurate is our intelligence capability? Are we keeping up with our nuclear deterrent? Do we have better weapons than our adversaries? How would we know? Can we withstand an EMP attack? How is our missile defense? How about the basic power grid? Is it safe? These are the questions Dr. Pry has been dealing with his whole career. Dr. Peter Vincent Pry is the Executive Director of the Task Force on National and Homeland Security. He has served on the Congressional EMP Commission, the Congressional Strategic Posture Commission, the House Armed Services Committee, and the CIA. He is the author of The Power and the Light, the Congressional EMP Commission's War to Save America. And now he anchors the National Security Report here on Action Radio. How much national security is enough? And now, Dr. Peter Vincent Pry. Now, we got a couple of callers. We got Kyle, we got Lita, and of course, Gina, our producer. So I'm going to hold you guys just for a bit until we get into our topic this morning. But just to let Dr. Pry know, the title of the show, Sun Tzu, The Art of War with China, and Knowing Your Country. We've had a two-hour huge discussion of philosophy of how they see us, how we should see them, and it's been an interesting couple of hours, especially with our callers here as well. Dr. Pryor, good morning. Help if I made his line live. rookie error. There we go. Let's bring this. There we go. And that's better. Dr. Pryor, good morning, sir. How are you today?
Oh, a little tired, I thought. I returned from speaking engagement in Utah, out at Salt Lake City, called the We Can Do Conference, where thousands of patriots gathered, determined to take their country back from what they accurately perceive as an increasingly tyrannical and yet incompetent Washington. And among the things on the agenda is Utah has a bill. They're going to introduce a bill to try to protect their electric grid from EMP.
Okay.
And I was there to back them up, to urge them to do that. They have, of course, a much broader agenda than that. But I think the audience appreciated that that if they were to take that step, you know, which is a step and not wait for Washington, it would be not only good for the citizens of Utah to protect their electric grid. Obviously, in order to be free and restore a constitutional republic, the first objective should be to stay alive, protect yourselves from the existential threat from the sun or from our adversaries. But, you know, by filling the vacuum that's been created by Washington that has for 20 years failed to deliver, you know, on this fundamental, you know, national security problem, has failed to deal with this national security problem, which is not that hard to solve, that if the states step up and start doing it, and Utah could be the first example, you know, it could be at the beginning of a peaceful second American revolution where we take our country back from the incompetent fools in Washington and start doing the important things for national security, domestic security, and other issues that on the scale of things, you know, kind of come below that. Like whether or not to teach critical race theory to our kids and brainwash them, you know. Obviously, if a state can seize the national security high ground and do something that would be, in these days, normally associated with a responsibility of Washington, you know, then all kinds of lesser public policy issues, and I don't regard them as lesser on a moral scale, but they are issues that arguably are even more within the purview of the states and the people, you know, than something like EMP protection. You know, if Utah can do that, you know, then we could be on our way to that peaceful second American revolution that we all want.
Well, so, I think we already started here. I mean, that's really what's going on. I don't always use the word revolution because, you know, that has connotations that the left will go, they're revolutionaries, they're insurrectionists, they're going to take over, you know, whatever, with guns, or they're evil people. It's like, that's not true. We're writing legislation. But a couple of things. One, you have two.
Well, I know. That's your approach.
Yeah. We just didn't disagree with that. You know, that's fine. Yeah. I want to hear about this. I wish I could have spoken at this conference because I could have told them, you know, what we're doing with citizen legislation. So I'd be curious. I'm going to look it up and see if there are any videos on it and maybe talk to the organizers for next year. But you said a couple things that are interesting that I want to focus on here. I'm sure you have another topic, but you've written two bills for writeyourlaws.com on model EMP legislation. Were you able to present those at all? After the conference, do you think you'd be able to submit those to any of these folks at the conference or people in Utah to take a look and use that as a model for their own legislation?
Oh, before I even went to Utah, they had reached out to me, representatives of the Utah State Legislature, to talk about how it should be done, and they've taken on board. And they've taken on board my advice about, how to structure the legislation. So,
okay.
It's not just a question of throwing it out there and hoping they'll follow it. There are, you know, people and they're highly confident they're going to pass it, you know, because the Utah State Legislature is very conservative, tends to be dominated by Republicans, but there were Democrats there too, you know, who are more like older line Democrats, more like JFK type Democrats, not like the crazies in Washington, okay? You know, who want to protect their grid. And I met with them offline separately, you know, and, you know, it was all very positive, very, you know, good meetings. The bill is already written. It's a question of introducing it. So
I'd love to see it.
Of course, I don't believe in one size fits all. You know, mm-hmm. You need to let the people who are most expert about what is politically sellable, you know, in a state, you know, are the people who live in that state and work in that state, yeah. The legislatures in that state, you know, so, you know, my advice is chiefly, you know, technical on how to proceed with this, avoiding the pitfalls of trusting the utilities within the state, okay, to be the experts, you know, that's always would be a fatal thing. To keep it simple, you know, don't get wrapped up in the technical and scientific issues. A bill has a much better chance of passing if it's simple and understandable to the average person, you know, and to keep it short, you know, in my experience, you know, short, simple, to the point bills have a better chance of passing than complex, lengthy technical bills, you know, that people don't fully understand. At least that's how it should be in a rational legislature where, such as you have in Utah, where people actually care about what gets passed in a bill. Obviously, that's not the case in Washington, where they pass enormous bills all the time that haven't even been read by their legislatures. Just another example of the decadence of Washington, where they go through the motions of pretending to be a constitutional republic. But, you know, when you're voting into law something you don't even understand, I mean, you might as well be an imperial system. You know, you're doing it because the party or the president who's in charge expects you to do it.
Yeah, that makes a whole lot of sense. I'm just always trying to advance Action Radio. So if they can use your law or your bill from us as a basis, and if it bears any resemblance, or if they heard about it or realized that we have this, you know, available to them, I'd love to post their bill as model legislation. And like I say, if it's curious, because what you advise, you know, us in terms of your bill and the Utah legislature, it'd just be great to get the parallels, because I want folks like Utah legislature to be able to look to citizens in their state or experts like you for different bills to be able to take that and translate that into legislation, not have it always come from, you know, the special interests, the wealthy, the corporations, the wacko groups, you know, the usual sources of legislation, especially that are there in Washington. And that would be huge to make that. Yeah.
How about this? Uh-huh. Instead of you know, why not make your focus Florida, which is where you are located?
Right.
And you can reach out to my EMP task force, www.emptaskforce.us, www.emptaskforce.us. You know me, but you can get to know other people in my organization, like Glenn Rose,
okay.
Who's out west. And, become proactive with Governor DeSantis and other state legislatures. I'll give you maybe Michelle Ray Winkle-Vasalinda, who was a leader on EMP protection in Florida. Unfortunately, I guess they're term limited in Florida when you're a House representative. And so she ran out of time there. But she made an excellent effort, you know, to try to get the Florida grid protected under prior governor. Who was it before DeSantis? And he's now a senator.
Rick Scott.
Rick Scott. You know, Rick Scott. I actually had conversations. She reached out to, you know, we made a lot of progress in Florida. And my book, Blackout Warfare, has got examples of draft legislation, a whole chapter dedicated to Florida, bills that Michelle, you know, tried to get past the Florida state legislature. And you know, there were examples of ways of doing it. So you can make, instead of, you know, the Utah people seem to have things well in hand. I think Florida needs your help more than Utah does.
I think so too. Well, we've got contrast in Florida. We've got sort of a liberal conservative contingent, much like they have out in California. And so I had to mute Lita and Kyle's line because we had some background noise. So I'll bring you guys back in just a little bit. But this is fascinating. And like I said, nothing happens in a vacuum. And I don't expect to be the only person, you know, doing citizen legislation, nor the only person advocating particular issues. That would be crazy. But it'd be nice to connect with some of these folks and see if they can, if they want to draft bills. Yeah, it'd be great, because I'd love to have him on the show.
I'll introduce you to Michelle Braywinkle, by former Democrat, mm-hmm. by the way, turned Trump supporter, okay, over EMP, because she was so disappointed. She understood. She's an example of an intelligent Democrat who understood, hey, this is an existential threat. And she was so disappointed that, you know, her own party she couldn't get support from her own party, but she did get support from the Republican Governor Rick Scott. And it changed her mind about the Democrat Party. She decided they had left her. She's more of an example of a JFK Democrat, but I will introduce you by email to her.
That'd
so
be great.
That maybe I would recommend you, maybe she'll be willing to come on your show. I should think she would.
Yeah, I hope so, yeah. And I don't, you know, party politics, I've sort of gotten away from that because there are people that identified it much more into globalists and patriots, you know, and the folks that, whether Democrat or Republican patriots or globalists, you know, that really defines who they are. We were talking about that in the first couple of hours. You said something else, too, and if I'm taking away from something, a topic you want to get to, just let me know. But you talked about people in Washington being both tyrannical and incompetent. Both are bad, but I think together – they're incredibly dangerous, and they're worse than they would be. I mean, competent, you know, tyrants, at least they're predictable. You know where they're going to go. Incompetent people are idiots. You know, they have no concept of what they're doing. And if you combine tyrannical incompetence, you know, you get President Nobody and the insurrection. It's just a very scary thing. Did you talk about that at all in the conference, or is it something you have some views on that?
I did talk about that at the conference as to why people shouldn't, and I've written about that. I've got a whole chapter called Don't Wait for Washington in my Blackout Wars book, precisely because they've proven themselves to be incompetent and corrupt, and they can't be trusted to do this. You know, Washington has spent decades trying to turn us into a 1984 society of sheep, where we just trust in the expertise of Washington to solve all of our problems. And that's not the way we're supposed to work as a constitutional republic. The idea that they are our employees, which they are, you know, and that the people are in charge is a concept that's long been lost. And, so people shouldn't be waiting for Washington. You can protect yourselves even against something like, you know, as exotic and an existential threat like EMP. There are things you can do, you know, at your state and local level, and even among your own personal life, about your family, in terms of being prepared. And all of that is good. Anything that returns power to the people over their own lives is a good thing and a step in the direction of a peaceful Second American Revolution. And I make no apologies for using that phrase. Mm-hmm. Let the left be afraid. They should be afraid. You know. If things ever do go downhill and are not peaceful, it's going to be their fault, you know, because they're the ones who have been failing to do their duty to this country and are fundamentally, increasingly imposing on the God-given natural rights of all Americans and shredding the Constitution right in front of our faces, you know, and they know that. They know that. That's why they moved two army divisions into Washington, you know, after the 2020 elections. You know, they actually thought that stealing the elections would be so provocative that the people might rise up at that time. But anyway, going on to this issue of tyrannical and incompetent, you know, that is the most dangerous combination, because we face several, you know, highly competent tyrannies in our foreign adversaries. You know, Putin, you know, is a master chess player. Xi is a master chess player. You know, they have been very successful in, you know, building up and using, you know, their military forces on the chessboard of the world, positioning themselves so that they can win the new Cold War without it becoming World War III. And we've talked about your show, you know, how they're succeeding in doing that. In the past, whereas our government, you know, which is tending toward a tyranny, is grossly incompetent, and our adversaries know that. There was a comment today in Chinese press about how the Biden administration is the most incompetent and corrupt administration that's ever existed in American history. And
why would they say that?
Like,
sorry to interrupt you here, but here's why. Because the whole show has been a fascinating walkthrough for me. It was an experiment in talking about the principles of Sun Tzu, of knowing your enemy, of how all war is deception, of how the battle is won before the first shot is fired, then applying that to Chinese philosophy and how they see themselves, and they have this new Chinese warrior. I'm sorry I sent you that article this morning. I really meant to send it to you yesterday about this new philosopher, theorist who's guiding a lot of what Xi Jinping does, because he wrote about a book called America Against America. And then us knowing our own country and seeing ourselves as others see us and seeing us as we really are, not an idealistic view of how we think we really are. And so you relate all this in, and then you start talking about to the specific example you mentioned of China. Why would they insult basically their ambassador to the U.S., Joe Biden? Why would they insult us and provoke us like they did up in Alaska and everything else? Is this public that they're doing this? Is this all part of deception? Are they secretly saying, Joe, I'm sorry, we got to criticize you in public, but don't take it personally because we really like what you're doing? What is the real story? What's really going behind something like a public insult to Biden when they know that they want to keep him around as their best friend and have so they can control him? I'm curious.
Well, I think that this is aimed more at U.S. allies than it is aimed at Joe Biden. One of Joe Biden's roles, if he is a Manchurian candidate, or if he is not, and he's just incompetent, right? An incompetent stooge. They have learned that they can insult him, insult the United States, do highly provocative things to our allies, and the United States will not respond. This happens, by the way. When Russia and China have had a joint naval exercise where they circled the Japanese home islands in a joint naval exercise, all right? You and I talked a week or two ago about how China threatened a joint nuclear war with Russia and China and North Korea, all nuking Japan, if Japan were to come to the aid of Taiwan.
Yeah.
And so you put it all together, putting it out worldwide that China, that the Biden administration is the most corrupt and incompetent in history. You say things like nuking Japan and the Biden administration doesn't respond. You circle the Japan home islands with the joint Russian-Chinese naval exercise, showing the reality of their military cooperation. You do that on the anniversary of kicking the Republic of Korea, now Taiwan, out of the United Nations, which is today, by the way. This is the anniversary when we supported Taiwan losing its seat in the United Nations to communist China, and what are the lessons that our allies are supposed to draw from this? The whole thing is the struggle for world order, and who's going to lead the new world order? Is it going to continue to be the United States serving as the world leader of the free world and, the protector of the free world and are the global policemen, or are we going to, is our credibility now so damaged, that our allies will no longer trust us?
We're not the free world. That's the irony of this. We're not the free world anymore. We're the globalist, communist, Marxist, ideologically suppressed world. We're not even this is why I said the denial, the self-denial of saying we're the freest country in the world when we've got a stolen coup, we've got a stolen presidency through a coup, that barricade themselves, as you said, with two divisions of troops around the Capitol that has done everything possible to suppress any activity to uncover the truth about the election. And this is as bad as any dictatorship anywhere in the country seizing power. They just didn't shoot anybody to do it, other than Ashley Babbitt. Just because they haven't been violent, they've done the Chinese way, the Sun Tzu way. They've taken power without firing a shot. They declared victory beforehand and accomplished it. So this is very much in line with Chinese philosophy. I don't know if they studied it or they just did it by accident, but it's very interesting, the parallels with what is happening here, that what China would have envisioned, if they were to steal the U.S. government, this is how they do it, being friends with, and this other article I had on the 30 you know, the hated 30 of Athens that sort of, you know, was glad Sparta took over because democracy wasn't working and keeping them rich. You know, it's fascinating how the elites here have raced, and another article on how they raced to China. You know, so well, that's the model, folks. You know, authoritarian communism with a little benevolence and a decent economy, and you've got a great model for how to control, you know, a massive country of a billion people. I just see too many parallels. They're all kind of like swirling in my head right now, and I haven't sorted them all out, but that's how it kind of looks right now.
Well, I think you're right, and it's not just the United States, of course, but across the whole so-called free world. You know, we have had the rise of socialist governments, the increasingly centralized power of their governments, and this has been noticed. I mean, Americans aren't the only ones who have conservative values and believe in limited government and free enterprise. Yeah. There are millions of disgruntled Frenchmen and Germans, and I correspond with some of them, you know, about how disappointed they are that the so-called free world is becoming less and less free, and we are raising the flag of tyranny increasingly with our own hand, you know, in all of these governments, and what are we to do about it? And that is another thing. That is another development that enables you to lose the new Cold War, you know, without it becoming a World War III, when your own people have become demoralized, and you have the rise of tyrannies. Because as you noted, and in the case of Sparta and Athens during the Peloponnesian War, you know, the usual at the end of that war, the normal practice in the classical world when another city state was defeated was to enslave the population, you know, kill off the military age men and enslave the population, and maybe even destroy the city completely. But the Spartans didn't do that because the Athenians were willing to tear down the walls, you know, so that their city state would be defenseless and to adopt tyranny. It was the fact that they had a democratic system and that the Spartans and the Lacedaemonian League, you know, the bloc that supported Sparta, the bloc of tyrannies, military dictatorships. It was the free political system of Athens that they feared. And if the Athenians were willing themselves to become an oligarchy or a tyranny, that made that problem go away. And so they, despite the fact that they had waged this long, bloody war, you know, that is, or at least in my time, was required reading, you know, in history and if you were going to be studying strategic studies, you know, the end was that Athens was allowed to exist as long as it became an oligarchy, a tyranny, and you could argue that that's the way the world is unfolding right now, you know.
We've got so-called free world governments
across the globe adopting the techniques and political philosophies of our mortal enemies, you know, of the tyrannies of the world. They've been arguing that they are more efficient systems, and maybe our elites secretly agree with them. In fact, maybe not so secretly.
But it's interesting that they don't have to destroy this nation and attack us and attack individuals and have all the militia groups rise up and anything that might happen under a classical, you know, war situation. They can co-opt our elites, install the elites in charge, and have people be so compliant and so empty ideologically and spiritually that they go along with it, when people would have thought we would have reacted violently, as you said, and that's what those two divisions were doing around D.C. The people weren't going to do that because they accepted lockdowns, they accepted masks, they accepted vaccine mandates until recently. So I had a show, actually, I don't know if I talked about this, but we did a show, I think, a couple of weeks ago, from compliance to resistance. You know, the tide has turned. And I really thought it was the speech by Donald Trump in Iowa, which is, I thought, the kickoff of his 2024 campaign. So, I mean, why else would you go to Iowa and make a speech? But it seems to me that that's when things started changing. And the greatest hope I have now, and after this I want to bring in Kyle and Lita, and we have new caller Angie, see if she wants to comment as well. But that something's happened. and something really good has happened. And it started with Southwest and then American and then Amtrak and then the health workers and then the firefighters and the police and all these folks. There's the vanguard of freedom started resisting the vaccine mandates and they all got fired for it. Then more people started resisting and they got fired for it. And more people are starting resisting. And it's going to get to the point where you can't fire everybody, you know. So the resistance has started. The tide, there's a change in this country philosophically that individuals are now taking charge and the collective result of individuals taking charge of themselves is that we're now starting to resist. And I don't know how that's going over in Washington. You're closer to it than I am. But what do you see in this trend? And do you see this as something that the elites are going to ignore, suppress, violently suppress, you know, politically censorship suppress, all of the above? What do you see in the trend that I see? I'm just curious.
Well, this is what I've been hoping would happen. And I think we've talked about it on your show but in the past, but maybe not. And that the first step toward a peaceful second American revolution is for the people to rise up and start saying no. You know, No, I'm not going to take a vaccine. No, I'm not going to let you teach my kids critical race theory. No, I'm not giving up my guns. You know, maybe No, I'm not going to let my state and my community be vulnerable to EMP and cyber warfare. I'm going to do what's necessary to protect my family and my community and my state. You know, that's the first step back toward freedom, to say no. And I think we talked on your show about how that worked with the fall of the Soviet Union, you know, which was the most sophisticated. I mean, they had perfected tyranny to the point of an art and science, you know, the greatest totalitarian state in history. And yet it failed when people lost faith in communism and just started refusing to obey, you know, went on strikes, you know, had huge demonstrations and started saying no to everything. The Soviet Union and the Warsaw Pact tyrannies fell in just a couple of years with remarkably little bloodshed. You know, even though they had enormous homeland security armies, you know, half the KGB is actually not just the Foreign Intelligence Service, but it was a well-armed army, you know, that was designed for putting down exactly that kind of thing, and it didn't happen. You know, I think the tyrants, the American tyrants, Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden and the people behind them, you know, with the high-tech oligarchs are not nearly as smart, you know, and have not nearly the evil courage or evil genius that the architects of the Soviet Empire had. And I think that they are have a real stupid understanding of how power works. You know, they think that because they are in charge of all the departments and agencies in Washington, and they have the so-called levers of power in Washington, that they basically, you know, got control of the country, and they can use those oppressive instruments to keep down, you know, the troglodytes like Greg Penglis and Peter Fry, you know, who might rise up, and your listeners who might rise up
every morning, you know, at 6 o'clock and start doing this. It's interesting.
You know, and use the IRS against us and maybe throw us in prison and things like that. But they can't put everybody in prison. As we've talked about in your show, if 85 million or a significant fraction of patriotic Americans who voted for Trump, you know, who saw the election stolen, organize and get together and start saying no simultaneously. Right now it's not that organized, but even now the pushback, I think, is causing great fear in Washington. I remember the moment Ceausescu fell. He thought he had that was the dictator of Romania when Romania was communist, and he had to return from a trip to North Korea and was really impressed with how Kim Jong-un had such iron control over the North Korean population that he could basically, you know, he could have them dress up in costumes and do all kinds of complicated gymnastics and parade type things to honor Kim Jong-un and his foreign visitors. And Ceausescu wanted to get that kind of discipline on the Romanian people. And so he started to try to mandate, you know, that people wear these clown suits and try to organize the Romanian population to honor him and other foreign visitors in that way. And he was in the middle of giving one of his lengthy 6-hour speeches, you know, to the crowd. And it's actually on film. You might be able to Google it. I've never actually looked for it, but I remember seeing the film of it where people started saying no, literally saying no and protesting and yelling at him, okay? And the look on his face, I think, is the look Nancy Pelosi and Chuck Schumer and Joe Biden and all those Washington elites will have when people get organized and start saying no. He fell from power like it was 2 weeks or maybe 1 week after that incident where he was where not only did he fall from power, but he and his wife were executed, you know, for
they were
being tyrants.
The crowd.
Romania was free.
Was it a trial or did they just shoot him?
There was some bloodshed. The Securitate, which was a, you know, fanatically, you know, communist, you know, their equivalent to the CIA, the equivalent to the KGB, you know, had to be rooted out. They did a lot of sniping against the people, and so hundreds of people were killed. But but when you consider that the whole country was freed, you know, I mean, it was surprisingly little bloodshed. It wasn't like the Romanian army rose up. I think that's one of the things that's one of the reasons why the elites in Washington I think as an example of their fear is first, you know, the mobilization of those two divisions. I mean, it shows how much they fear to occupy Washington, how much they fear the American people. Another thing that makes them an evidence of their fear is this effort to purge the armed forces of people with conservative views. I think the COVID vaccination mandate is really part of that process, you know, in addition to warning about the fake white supremacy. And so they've been trying to root out fake white supremacists in the military. In other words, people who voted for Trump, people who are Christians, people who have traditional conservative values, those are all the white supremacists, alleged white supremacists, because they know those people are not politically reliable. But if you're willing to bow down and have your natural rights violated, you know, and be ordered to take that COVID shot, you may have the psychology that they want in our military, a person who will mindlessly obey any order and do anything on command. You know, people who are willing to do that, to be completely, mindlessly, and blindly obedient, which is what they want in their military. That's the kind of military that can be relied upon to kill 6 million Jews like the Nazis or 10 million Kulaks like the Red Army. And that's what they want. But I don't think they'll get there, you know, because, you know, America and its cultural roots is still free. And I think that they don't want to get to the point where they have to strike back. They probably will try. They'll do anything to stay in power. But I don't believe that a young Marine will fire on his parents or grandparents, you know, who are protesting for freedom. That's what they want. That's what where they need to get. But if it ever comes to that, you know, I think that is not going to break the way that the Washington elites hope. And they will have and we'll end up with a peaceful Orange Revolution, where the armed forces that they are hoping to turn against the American people will turn on them and say, no, we're not doing it. We're not shooting our parents and grandparents and our neighbors, you know, to keep you guys in power. And that's all over. You could see some of this in Virginia over the gun issue. You know, when Governor Newsom tried to pass confiscatory gun laws in Virginia, all of the sheriff's departments across Virginia basically said, we're not going to enforce a law that's unconstitutional. You know, we're not doing this. And that issue suddenly quietly went away. It quietly went away. You know,
that's
they're
the
not
myth.
There
it's
yet.
Not that hard to defeat these people. This is the thing that is really fascinating. When power falls, like in Romania, it fell quickly. When it fell in Poland, it fell quickly. Power can fall quickly here, too. I want to let you sum up, because I want to get to Lita and I want to get to Kyle and Gene and see if they have questions, because this is fascinating. Did you have another topic you wanted to present, or can we keep going with this? This is fast. This is really interesting.
There was another topic I wanted. In fact, there was another main topic I wanted to talk about, but maybe we could leave it. You know, I wanted to talk about the.
Yeah.
Okay, sure. Let's take the callers.
Yeah, let's start with Lita, and then we'll go to Kyle. I only muted your lines just because we had background noise, but once I make you live, we can stay live for a while. Questions, you know, and let's get directly to Dr. Pry. Lita, you're on first. Do you have a question for Dr. Pry?
No, I've just we're just trying to organize in our own community of resistance and fighting for our rights. And the more we connect with each other, the stronger we get. So that's all I got to say.
Yeah. You know, it's interesting, though, that even though it's individual action, the effect is collective. You know, if the union, like the firefighters and the police, they're organized by their the fact that they, now maybe the union's not behind them, but the fact that they are unionized, there's a community of those people. There's a community of airline pilots. There's a community of Amtrak workers. There's a community of health workers. And even though they're not all organized, the health workers aren't organized with the airline pilots, with the Amtrak folks. Their individual actions are having a collective effect that I think is really profound. Let me get Kyle in on this too, and see if I have a question for. Oh, thank you. Yeah, for Dr. Pry. Kyle, turn your mic on. There we go. Kyle, are you there? Did you want to make a comment, or otherwise I'll go to Gene? Going once, going twice.
Hold on. I'm sorry. I turned my mic off so there wouldn't be any sound in the background. I apologize.
Oh,
Dr. Pry.
Go ahead.
And Greg, I have the same question for both of you, which should kind of bring together what you've been talking about. Dr. Pry, I guess go first. I don't care who answers the question first. But what percentage of Americans have you heard do you think fought off the British back in, 1700s, 1800s, whenever the hell we fought off the British?
Well, the estimated percentage is about a third of the population. You know, the American Revolution was supported by about a third of the population, and about a third supported the king and were Tories, and another third were apathetic. So, and I think that's important for our own times because it shows that you can have a revolution with a minority. And that's what the left has succeeded in doing. I don't think they have anything like a third of our population. I'd be surprised if 10% of the American people really supported the woke agenda, you know, the far-left agenda that is so popular in Washington. I think there is a distinct minority that are using the powers of the Supreme Court and the instruments of government, you know, the centralized power of Washington, you know, which the founders warned about this. The founders warned about allowing the Washington to become too powerful. But that has been good for tyranny because that's how a tiny minority on the left has been able to impose their values on the rest of the country so far.
Amen.
Kyle, I'm wondering if your microphone isn't providing a little of the feedback that Gene was doing it too. We'll work on that. But anyway, I'd rather have your commentary and not worry about the feedback so much. Did you have a follow-up, Kyle, for that?
Yeah. If I think we're there then, and he can confirm this. When I look up the statistics for registration in America, it's a little hard to find because independents aren't registered by each state in the same manner. For instance, I could tell you the exact registration statistics for California, but it's across the U.S., as far as I can tell, and I did this with an engineer friend of mine, we think 42% are registered as independents, 27% registered as Republicans, 29% registered as Democrats. What can you share with that? Again, 42% of Americans being registered as one form of an independent or the other.
Yeah, that actually makes sense. But the other thing to think about it too is that there's a lot of Republicans. Like I unregistered as a Republican because I think they're a bunch of geldings, and I'm not going to re-register until either right before the primary if I feel like it, or if they actually start challenging the elections properly and supporting the audits. So there's a lot of registered Republicans who do so for the primary that don't support the party. I think there's a lot of Democrats who do that too that are just basically good Democrats. They love the country, but they also have a different solution to problems like, you know, larger government programs and things like that, as opposed to the actual Democrat Marxists, which is a whole different thing. Kyle, I got to meet your line again. I'm getting a little bit too much feedback, but thank you. Yeah, let's get Gene. Did you have a comment as well? This is it's an interesting morning here, as we go over some of these big topics. Gene?
No, I didn't have any more of a comment, no.
Okay. Well, let me talk to something I want to mention to Dr. Pry and everybody. I've been doing a fascinating study, and the Santa Rosa Volunteers has commissioned me to do reports on all our founding documents. This is going to be like a 2 or 3 year project. But what I'm finding more and more, and this is something that's not taught in schools, and Dr. Pry, I don't know if you had this in school either, that the Articles of Confederation, you know, we sort of raced to the Constitution, but if you look at the critique of what people were worried about in the Constitution, the government would get too big, they'd borrow too much money, they're making, false allegations that the Articles of Confederation, about 3 or 4 confederacies independent, you know, they'll destroy the Union, and we'll all be at war with other foreign countries. They made up all this nonsense. you know, try and get the Constitution through. Now, the Constitution's great, but I sort of put myself in the position of wondering, if we had modified the Articles of Confederation, would we have had a civil war? Would we have the huge government we have now? Would it have gone from a federalist to more of a nationalist, top-down supremacy government instead of within the constitutional bounds? It's something interesting to think about, and the more I'm learning about the Articles of Confederation, the more I'm realizing, not so much that that might have been the solution, but that the problems that the anti-federalists articulated with the Constitution were right on then, and they're absolutely right on now. It's a fascinating look back in our own history that we're missing, and we don't realize. We think the Constitution is the epitome of liberty and the Republic, and it's not. It's good, but again, is it as good as it could be? And that's something that I think we should talk about, needs to be taught in the schools. Dr. Bryant, have you been exposed to this much? I'm just curious.
Well, you and I have talked about this, and I've often thought about it myself because, you know, I recently reread the Federalist Papers, you know, the arguments made for the Constitution and for establishing a federal government by Alexander Hamilton and Monroe and Madison, some of the, you know, the great minds who established the original government, the original founding fathers. And, you know, when you read the Federalist Papers today, and it used to be required reading in school, you know, to read the Federalist Papers to understand the arguments as to why we are a constitutional republic, how come, you know, why was the government established the way it was. Not required reading anymore, but it should be, you know, because when you go through every one of the safeguards that was supposed to be a safeguard, I mean, the concern with the anti-federalists, as you know, was that if you established a centralized federal government in Washington, that it could become a tyranny. And we just fought this American Revolution, and here you guys are trying to reestablish a monarchy over us.
With
the anti-federalist
elites, with,
fear was.
You know, the same problem.
And they had all these ingenious arguments about how the government was structured to avoid that outcome, to avoid Washington becoming a tyranny. And then when you read the Federalist Papers, you see that every one of those safeguards, you know, has been breached, you know, and every one of them. And we're down to the last guarantee, you know, the last ditch for freedom against tyranny is the people and the Second Amendment, you know. That was their final guarantee against tyranny, and that's where we are today. You know, you are a man. You and I. Here's where you and I differ. You have this kind of boundless faith in the written word and writing laws and bills and legislation. You know, to as the solution to everything. You know, and that's natural for somebody who is a constitutional Republican. But I think that I don't have that same faith in those things. I think that this is a phenomena of history. The power can't be contained by the word, you know. I mean, in the end, power does come out of the barrel of a gun and over people's actual physical actions. It doesn't necessarily have to be the use of a gun, but at least it has to be saying no and getting organized and going on strike and protesting. And then later on, when you've won the war, quote unquote, hopefully peacefully, then you can have the peace treaty, which is where the bills and the writings come in. But the other side is not going to, you know, you can be as ingenious you want in terms of crafting laws and legislative language. When you're dealing with totalitarian, tyrannical forces, they have no respect for that, just like the Democrats have. I mean, look at how they've broached all the election laws. They don't care about the law. They'll do whatever is necessary and have done whatever is necessary to get power. And we've arrived at a place where people who care about their freedom have got to do whatever is necessary to get their freedom back and to take their country back. And I think the idea that you can do that legislatively is kind of an opiate for people. Oh, we'll win the midterm elections. Then if Trump comes back or we get the right political leaders in, the right combination of political leaders in, they'll write a law and it'll make everything okay. I don't think that that's true. I don't think that that's how it's going to work out. I think we're too far gone for that sort of thing. I think we're following the pattern that most systems have followed, you know, that have fallen into tyranny, that have gone from more or less free systems into unfree systems, you know, where because power always wants to be centralized. You've always going to have a faction that wants to be tyrannical, that thinks it knows better than everybody else, that fundamentally despises the people, and they feel because of their wealth and or good luck in life, you know, that they are entitled to be the leaders. And this is not unique to our own situation. This has been a recurrent theme throughout history, you know, where you end up with a faction, and it's one of the reasons why free political systems have been so rare, you know, and tend not to live very long lives, you know, because they divide into faction, and then one faction, you know, hates the other faction so much, even more than foreign adversaries, you know, that they're willing to break the rules and cease to be a nation of laws and do become a nation of men. And, you know, who can say that we're a nation of laws right now? We're not, you know. To the extent that the laws are enforced at all, they're only enforced against us, you know, against the other political side. And we just can see this in terms of what happened in Washington with all of those protesters from January 6th who are still languishing in prison. You know, I think
political prisoners
are being violated every day right in front of our eyes. And yet the Black Lives Matters and Antifa murderers and arsonists and terrorists, you know, who were burning down American cities, you know, I'm not aware that any of them are in prison or have been punished. I am aware that hundreds of them have been basically let go and nothing has been done to them. You know, the law, we are not a nation of laws. You know, the law is being used to oppress us.
Yeah, that's fascinating. Here's what I want to do. I'm going to make a quick comment on that, play a commercial from our webmaster, who's also a sponsor of the show, and then I want to go back through our panel here, Lita, Kyle, and Gene. The purpose of Action Radio is not, you know, people say, how many laws have you gotten passed, or this will never get through Congress, and the laws themselves, as you're saying, you know, that's not going to lead the revolution. I see us as part of the revolution. But what I really, the reason that I write these laws and I get other people writing these laws is more of an education and a rallying point for the second revolution. So we show what's possible. When I put a law together, which was actually fairly easy, to put vaccine product liability back on the vaccine manufacturers. When I have a law that gets rid of part of the withholding tax, you know, when people are earning their standard deduction. Most of this is educating people. So in other words, if you're going to have a second revolution, you have to have something to fight for. You have to have ideas, you have to have ideals, and you have to have someplace you want to go. And what I see, servants and patriots want to fight a revolution, but they don't know where they want to go. I mean, limited government is too limited. It's not enough of a goal to get them going. So what I see us doing is providing that extra, that guidance, that whole new way of looking at things in ways that they never thought possible. As far as what Kyle was saying earlier about the division, you know, one third, one third, one third, that kind of makes sense. And what the dirty little secret of those of us who believe in freedom is that in order for us to be free, we have to drag everybody else along with us. And the founders knew that too. In order for us to be a free country, that one third had to kind of, you know, push the rest of us into a republic and away from a democracy and certainly away from a colonial government. And so these things, they work together. I understand your criticism, you know, of what we're doing, but I disagree with it in that I think there's a bigger picture here. And the bigger picture for me is in the education process, the motivation process, these sort of coming together of ideas. We talk about things that no one's ever talked about, making things possible that no one ever thought possible because they never thought of them, or at least if they did, they didn't talk about it openly and publicly. And so that's a big mission of what we do here. Anyway, let me just do a couple things. I'm going to go through our panel here to play this for a couple minutes, and I'll be right back. This is Greg Penglis for Action Radio with a personal recommendation and testimonial for Eric Colley, our new webmaster and marketing guru. Eric has been invaluable in upgrading our website, writeyourlaws.com. To help you with your marketing, Eric Colley offers proven, cost-effective strategies to help small businesses, startups, and nonprofits market themselves on Google Page One. You can gain thousands of followers and be far more competitive, and this is the good part, without paid advertising. Most business owners don't have the time or expertise to excel at marketing.
Even fewer had the funds to hire a special employee. And you don't have to. There is a better option. Eric Colley, a consultant who uses leading-edge marketing strategies to increase your profitability at costs which are far more affordable than an advertising or marketing agency. You can be seen high up in Google's page one. You can dominate Google's local three-pack of businesses next to the search results map. You can be trusted as much as personal recommendations from family and friends. You can increase foot and website traffic. You can do all this, all without paying Google, Facebook, or Instagram one red cent. Eric Colley can be reached at 208-999-7510. That's 208-999-7510. His website is besmallbusiness.com. That's besmallbusiness.com. BESMALLBUSINESS. besmallbusiness.com. And you can reach him by email at eric@besmallbusiness.com. And that's how you do it.
All right, let's get back here. Let's get Kyle's line live. We had a little bit of feedback on the mic, so I had to mute you during our sponsor there. So you have about 6 minutes left. Summary question for Dr. Pry.
Kyle? I think this could be fun. I'm going to try to go along your line here. The reason I brought up the 42%, I wanted to remind uh-huh. everybody listening that 42% of America gets it. They at least have gotten away from the left and the right. So if we ever need a fighting force, we already have it, because most people are not registered. 29% Democrat, 27% Republican. 42% of America is already registered with the independent parties. My last question to you guys is, whoever wants to answer, Washington wanted a one-party system, from my understanding of history. Who do you think messed it up and got us to the two-party system? I think it's Hamilton. Who do you guys think?
Oh, good question. Well, I have a clue. Dr. Price?
Well, my understanding is that Washington didn't want any political parties. He didn't believe in faction. He wanted people to regard themselves as sovereign individuals, you know, and he was afraid of faction because of what the classical histories, you know, taught us, you know, that we were talking about before, that when you divide up into political parties, it results in, and he's right. Does the party system, you know, tend toward polarization and faction, but it also results in it leads toward bumper sticker politics and away from a deep, intelligent assessment of what are the problems we're trying to solve and how to solve them. You know, it's better to hear from a dozen different perspectives on how to solve a particular problem than just two. You know, when you have two political parties, that's usually the only kinds of solutions that they are, polarized solutions and nothing in between. And I think that kind of process accounts significantly for why we've arrived where we are, you know, and accounts for one of the reasons why government doesn't do things well. Now, maybe Washington was unrealistic, and apparently he was, because of the way history worked out. And yeah, it was Alexander Hamilton and Jefferson too. I mean, we had faction arise right in George Washington's cabinet, you know, because Hamilton and Jefferson had radically different views about what the future of the country should be, and they hated each other, and to pursue their different visions for America, they ended up starting to organize first unofficially, but then officially into Democratic Party. So Washington's vision for the future of America didn't survive his administration. In fact, I think the political parties were organized even before he left office. But he personally didn't want to belong to a political party, and he didn't believe in political parties. And his preference would have been there to be no political parties, just a nation of sovereign individuals, you know, who think for themselves and hope, preferably think deeply. And, you know, people did think deeply in those days. You know, for their entertainment, they would go and listen to political debates that would last hours. You know, it was one of the – when the gentlemen broke for their cigars and brandy, they talked about the politics, you know. They were politically very well educated, I think much more so, you know, than than your average American today, who the state and the educational system has basically tried to get people to be too deferential to government, and the kinds of solutions that come out of government. But anyway, that's my thought on the topic. Greg, did you have a comment?
Real quickly, because I want to get Lita to get a last comment in here. Most parties within legislatures. I mean, they're free to associate and make money and raise money and spend money on behalf of candidates. But once a candidate is in elective office, they should not be able to belong to a party, nor should a party determine the committee chairs, nor what the vote should be, nor to be able to whip their members into shape. They all should be individuals, and all ballots should be secret. Secret written ballots for bills and for committee chairs and everything else. Lita, you get the last word. You got about a minute and 30 seconds.
Well, Greg, and Dr. Pryde, thank you for speaking again. We're kind of in a situation right now in my hometown where there's two major companies forcing their employers to take the DNA altering vaccine, mm-hmm. and risk of losing their job. And so our churches are coming together trying to find ways and also to possibly write some bills or something of the nature. And so I appreciate you and your example of how to go about these things and educating us, but most of all, wanting to get the education back into the schools of what's going on there as well, the teachings that they're giving to these children. Fortunately, I live in a small town, so it's in the Bible Belt. So a lot of us have the advantage of teaching our kids of what true America is and educating ourselves as well, because we've been desensitized to a lot of things.
Yeah.
So I
got to hold you up. We got like 3 seconds left in the show today. So yep, I'm going to talk to you off
good.
The air,
okay.
See if we can schedule some time for you and your church to come on the show, and let's talk about some legislation. Let's talk about, body autonomy, the civil right, adding that to civil rights. Dr. Pryde, thank you so much. Lita and Kyle and Christina, our producer. Let's do it again next week. Let me get to your main topic first. It's probably a better way, but this has just been such a fascinating hour and a fascinating show today. So thanks to everybody. Greg Pangloss here for Action Radio at blogtalkradio.com/citizenaction. Back tomorrow morning, 6 o'clock Central, 7 o'clock Eastern, 5 Mountain, 4 Pacific. We'll get Kyle up early. All right. Thanks, everybody. Back tomorrow.